I feel like in this stage of my life that my life satisfaction does come from my job. And, you know, very like when you first get a job, a lot of your identity hinges on the job that you have. And you would introduce yourself as, hey, I'm Ketanya, I'm a teacher. Mm. Nice to meet you. You know, what do you do kind of thing. And then you reach that point in your life when you just don't do that anymore and you go back to yourself. I was actually reading an article about that and how... it's nice to nice not to define yourself as what you do at work. Because, I don't know, if you just keep doing that, then you're just boxing yourself in, I guess. And then those kind of pressures would come, like what Alistair's feeling.
Yeah. It ends up being like, oh gosh, this is what I want to be doing. As opposed to, okay, this gives me money. And I do enjoy doing it, but I don't look to it to give me meaning or all of my social life.
That actually concerns me. Like, teaching sometimes is very difficult or whatever. I start questioning myself as a person rather than like, hey, I'm just here to do my job. This is the first teacher-teacher podcast.
It is.
Yeah.
I actually think, like, I kind of do it to have an excuse to say to someone, hey, I want to have a conversation with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So in some ways, I use, like, interviews to just be like, can we talk?
Yeah, I like it.
But I realize that just puts me in a cool frame of mind. Like, I guess teaching and just asking people questions, I guess being a pseudo-journalist, they kind of describe the two ways that I want to kind of walk through life.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I used to think that it was being a tourist and just notice everything and be present and see what places are like, but I think now it's more what can I learn from people and what kind of a connection can I build from people. That's like asking people questions, and then what we do as teachers is I think try and bring people around to doing that for themselves.
Yeah, I fully agree. That's exactly what I love about the job. All of these perspectives, points of views that you never would otherwise hear, or you know, they would just be faces that you would walk by on the street. But you actually get to know them so intimately. And not only that, but they're from so many different countries and different cultures, different point of views, walks of life. Like, it's very eye-opening in a way that I don't really have to go anywhere in order to experience such a beautiful thing. And I thank myself, like, I thank my job every day for that, for that opportunity. I thank my students for that opportunity as well, whenever I can. Like, I always tell them I learn a lot. I feel like, you know, you guys may be learning a lot from this in this class, but I learn a lot more from you guys than I've ever had in my life. It's really cool. I guess that's a little bit unique to ESOL teachers as well, because it's not a specific subject, it's life.
yeah, I love how we can just talk about like anything. We do it in English and it counts as doing our job.
I know. Sometimes I feel guilty, like shouldn't be getting paid to do this. This is too cool.
So yeah, on like a really, really good day, I think that the best thing that I think I can do as a teacher is teach someone that they can learn from someone else.
Yeah.
And if I make my class be, you know, interested and they're like using initiative, and like I had classes be like, oh, we're talking about calligraphy, and then they started giving each other like a calligraphy lesson, and then we organized for them to do it properly and bring all these paints and paper, and then they thought of some idioms that they could teach the class and things. And I think stuff like that, like just showing that they're curious about each other, because I like to kind of kid myself that that's really useful in the world. Like, that's what gives me warm fuzzies, because I think the world kind of needs more understanding and more curiosity as well. Like, not looking at other cultures and being like, oh, they do this wrong, look at how they do this, but like, hey, no one is perfect, but if we look at each other, we could learn how to be better than we are.
Yeah. 100% agree. Those moments are the best moments, I would say. Like, other than the, like, aha, I finally get it. This thing that I haven't been able to understand for a very long time. In this situation, the way you've presented it, I finally understand. I love that. But what I love more, for example, what we did today, where people who would never otherwise talk to each other did. They learned so much from each other. Smiles and laughter all around. A lot of interesting things were found out in that lesson, and a lot of things were discussed, and things that some people would probably just never think about or not really care to ask another person about. Like, it was awesome. A stranger at that. Yeah.
Yeah. And especially, like, We talked about, you know, how they'd been raised and things. Like, that's kind of useful for just different parenting styles from different countries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. When my students were feeding back on the different people that they had interviewed, they also talked about the countries that they were from and how, for example, how strange it would be or how surprisingly similar it is or things like that. And that was really nice.
Mm. How do you think that Filipinos raise their kids differently? I guess you haven't experienced, like, being raised
by a
European, but...
Yeah, that's right. I wouldn't consider my family necessarily your run-of-the-mill Filipino family. Mm-hmm. First of all, I didn't grow up with a father. So basically, my mom raised us, me and my two brothers, by herself. She didn't exactly have traditional Filipino values, but she did and she didn't. So in saying that she didn't, we wouldn't hang around other Filipino families all the time. And that's quite a quintessential Filipino thing to do. You visit people, you hang out with them, you bring them gifts, you bring them food, you just watch boxing with them and things like that. That's not something she would never do. We were very much homebody kind of people. Just us. Watch TV together, do chores together. Relax together. That's what we would do. In the sense that she is Filipino, gender roles were pretty huge in my family. So without saying anything, this was just the thing. I would always be helping my mom in the kitchen, either because I offered or because my brothers didn't offer, but obviously someone needs help, I'll help. And my brothers would do the things like lawn mowing or vacuuming and things like that, and they wouldn't really do so much in the kitchen, aside from my oldest brother, who kind of just experiments with stuff. He just does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and mm-hmm. he gets into intense phases mm-hmm. where he'll, like, cook apple pie, and he'll cook it every day, or, like, French fries, and it'll be French fries every dinner, but only because he wants to. He's that kind of person. But in a traditional sense, we had these... a lot of unspoken values that I never realized were a thing until I met, like, Europeans. Like, oh, the huge thing. Actually, I mentioned this with my students recently. When you're 18.
Yeah.
In New Zealand, you're somewhat expected to leave home. Or rather, like, hey, you know, you're 18 now. Where's your job? Where are you going in life? Can you just get out? Mm-hmm. Kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. Would you say that was a feeling that you got when you turned 18, or...
I think my parents tend to be on the protective side.
Okay.
So they've actually... I never got any of those vibes.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
Probably a job, though.
Mm.
Yeah, it would be not necessarily move out, but... Oh, you probably are capable of earning money. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but my mom, she never said anything like this, but she would only... Well, of course she would encourage us to get a job, but... she wanted to keep us there as long as she could.
Okay. Yeah.
And her rule was, as long as you're not married, you're more than welcome to stay.
Mm.
So that's why I've got my brother who still... Both my brothers still live at home, even though they have full-time jobs. It's not a big deal, but yeah, that's what they do. And I was just quite surprised because I was listening to Alistair's parents talking about, I think, some of their cousins. And like, oh, he's 18 and he hasn't moved out, like, blah, blah, blah. Those kinds of things. And I was like, whoa. Just because you're 18 doesn't mean you're ready to face the world, or that was quite surprising. And my mom and I often talked about this. Yeah, we were quite shocked that it was a thing to make your kids go out. Or maybe that's something that's reduced in society now, whereas it was a generation ago.
Yeah. I think there's a thing here, like, there's a lot of people.
Yeah,
like, there are multiple people I know who live with their parents just because of the way that things are.
That's right, the way that things are, exactly. Yeah. Whereas maybe a generation ago, for example, their parents probably were kicked out when they were 8 or moved out at 18. Sorry, not 8, 18.
Yeah, it's just this different whole idea. I guess it's like, oh, you're old enough. It's time to be independent because, you know, if you can be independent, then you should. Whereas, like, other cultures, it's like, oh, well, you don't have to be independent yet, so why would you?
There wasn't that feeling of you're old enough now. If you can be independent, you should. It was more like you should help the family. So pull your weight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to be here, that's cool. No problem. Mm-hmm. As long as you're making some kind of contribution, either monetary or labor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember my mother telling me that maybe this is the same all over the world, but in Filipino culture, for, I think, a generation before hers, the more children you have, the better. And it's like, blessed be the household with as many children, because the parents will be taken care of later on in life, kind of thing. So she had a lot of brothers and sisters. People in that era had a lot of brothers and sisters, because Filipino households, well, Filipino children, I think there's a joke about it, but they're always doing chores, and they're really afraid of their parents. Respect for your parents is huge okay. in our culture. You don't talk back. Otherwise, you expect a slap in the face. There's none of that. Mm-hmm. You would never disrespect your mother. Just because children can actually see how hard they work for, you know, for what you have. And so, yeah, we just don't do that. Talking back and mutual trust and understanding was huge in my family. I don't know if that's the same in other Filipino families, but my mom, she would always involve us in everything that was going on in the house. And I really appreciated her for that.
Yeah, that's so nice.
Yeah. Like, for example, you know, if there were bills and we didn't have enough money to pay them, most parents would kind of keep it to themselves and shoulder the burden and go take on three jobs or whatever. But she would always just be like, hey, guys, you know, we don't have enough money for the bills today. Just be more careful next time. I'll try to find a solution. But in the meantime, you know, just letting you guys know. Mm. So we wouldn't just be kids running around like, oh, let's do whatever the hell, because it doesn't really matter. Because it totally did, and we felt it. Yeah. So that drove us to become more helpful. Considering that she was a single mother as well.
Yeah. It's kind of something I've been thinking about lately, because I watched that kids movie from Brazil. You know, it was quite sad and thoughtful, and it definitely, you know, it showed people working in factories, and it showed that they were being made redundant because their jobs were being replaced by machines, you know, so it showed a lot of problems to kids. Mm-hmm. And it's like, to what extent do you want to shield kids from the way things are or make them aware of it? And I, to be honest, I don't know where I fall on that.
I know. Me too. Because, like, on the flip side of this, because of our, you know, we really wanted to help our mom and all of these things. So we did end up being quite, I wouldn't say burdened, but we were troubled by it, right? So my oldest brother, he started working while he was in high school as a cleaner. So he would go to school by day, and then straight after school, didn't even have a license at the time. I think he pretended he did, but he didn't. And so he drove to the cleaning company, and he would just clean after school. He would come home at like 2 a.m., 3 a.m.
Oh, wait, then, is this in New Zealand?
Yeah, this is in New Zealand. Okay. Yeah, my oldest brother worked for like Paramount Cleaning or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he would come home at 3 a.m., go to sleep, and then go back to school and do his thing. And that actually had a huge impact on his... Because he was in his last year. So it had a huge impact on year 13, which meant he wasn't able to go to university. And so it was a sacrifice, a huge sacrifice. At that point, my mother was pregnant with my youngest sibling. She was working at Sky City. Yeah. And she would work night shifts. So nobody was home to cook. So it would just be me, because I knew how to cook. It would be like simple stuff. But I would cook for my for my brothers, do the laundry, just make sure everyone's okay. My older brother would be at work, and my middle brother would do the chores and clean up around the house. And then when the working people come home, we just rest, we hang out as a family, and then that's it.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
So it was quite a crazy time, which is what I mean by when you share your troubles with your children, it does, you know, wisen them up about the world, but at the same time, it takes away a little bit of, I guess, their childhood innocence or childhood carefreeness.
Because
I don't think I can really ever remember a time when I was carefree as a child. Because even when I lived in the Philippines, you know, I would witness my parents arguing and fighting, and I would see how upset my mom is. And I noticed that my dad wasn't around anymore, and I was just like, Mom, where's Dad? I wish he would just come home. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mom distinctly sitting me down on the couch, and she's like, there's a reason why your dad isn't here with us, but if you want him to be here, he can be, but I just want you to know that I'd be very sad if he were still around.
Okay.
So I was like, I don't really get it, but sure. Okay. He's probably a dick, whatever. And then later on, I was, I think, three or four at that time. And so later on, actually, as I got older, I would find out the story. Mm-hmm. And I remember when my mother told us all that we were going to, she'd also informed my biological father. And he said, oh, aren't you going to take me? And my mom was infuriated. She absolutely lost it. Like, no, of course I'm not taking you. He did so many messed up stuff. Yeah. Including while she was pregnant with my middle brother, who's older than me, but not the oldest. While she was pregnant with my middle brother, she would sit in the room and my dad would come home drunk, just come and like attempt to strangle her.
Whoa.
And that was just the thing for her life. Like, of course he's not coming to New Zealand with us.
Mm-hmm.
She found it preposterous that he'd even ask.
Okay.
So there's that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can't remember a time I was really carefree. But I was like, oh, in the Philippines, when you're a child, you would just go out the door. You'd find the other kids just playing on the street. So when I came to New Zealand, I tried to find kids playing on the street. And nobody was playing on the street. I was like, where's everybody?
Where's all the people?
Where's all the people playing, like, you know, knots and crosses on the street with chalk or, like, hopscotch like I saw in the movies? Like, no, there wasn't any of that. So I actually desperately tried to seek out people. So I would knock on neighbors' doors. I'd be like, are there any kids? Can I play? And, yeah, I was, like, 7. It was really embarrassing. But I did end up finding, like, neighborhood friends to run around with. Two Kiwi girls. It was really fun. We just hang out at the playground and pretend we were all kinds of things, like pirates or like princesses, James Bond, all kinds of things on the playground. And then I'd come home at sundown.
It was great that you had that confidence then and you didn't just sort of arrive and, ooh, no one's
here.
No, because
that's what we do in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just knock on the door and you're like, are there kids? And then the kids just come, even if you don't know them.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that idea.
Yeah. No, that's literally what you do. Even, for example, I would leave the door open, maybe the balcony or something, and if people could see we were having a big feast, you could just literally show up and just eat food and leave.
Nice.
Like, I mean, if you're in the same neighborhood, nobody needs to know your name, but people kind of just need to know, oh, you're from here, that's cool, have some food. Hi. They're very, very hospitable.
Mm. Yeah. What would happen, like, people here would be, you know, afraid that they would be unwelcome or that they would somehow eat too much. They wouldn't understand how much they're able to eat. Like, how do you deal with that kind of thing when it happens?
There's so much food. Okay, there's more than enough food.
Always cook way too much food. Yes, and that's right. It's expected that people will come.
Exactly. Big pots for everybody. Everybody brings a big pot and then you're sorted. I don't know. Well, obviously, this is really stupid to say, but you've never been to a Filipino gathering, but if you have, you'll see exactly what I mean.
Okay.
And like, at the end of the party, there'll still be enough that you can take some home with you. And, like, everybody gets, like, an ice cream tub. And you would just put the leftovers in there and bring it home. Yeah, so every time my mom would go to a Filipino party, we'd just, you know, wait for her to come back with an ice cream tub for the food. Like, that's how it is. Yeah.
Okay, wow. That's so nice, because, like, I realize in our culture, we, you know, like, we have such a sense of privacy.
Mm.
Like, we eat alone, and, you know, someone is unwelcome if they just show up.
Oh, yeah.
People apologize for calling at, like, dinner time, and you're not supposed to.
Definitely.
But then, you know, we have this problem that it's quite difficult to meet people, you know, and that people will go out and eat in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Kind of to have the experience of having other people around you, even though you don't end up talking to them. And I feel like we kind of, in some ways, seek out a little bit more interaction or the sense of community, even though we're not comfortable with it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. That's what I meant before when I said my mom didn't tend to interact with other Filipinos. And that would be strange, because other Filipinos, we really stick together. That's great. But on the flip side of that, there's a lot of gossip and backstabbing and two-faced action going on. And that's just a human thing. You're trying to protect your face. You're trying to protect your family. And at the same time, you're expressing your dislike of this person who comes and eats all your food or whatever.
Okay, so there would be that kind of
conflict
as well. Yes, there's a lot of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Big communities, everybody's tight-knit. But in the background, there's always undercurrents of, like, gossip or scandal. Or judgment, things like that. And that's what we didn't like, which is why we didn't participate. That's what we didn't like in the Philippines itself. So when we came here, we took it as a blank slate.
Okay, yeah, because I was just thinking, was that really hard for your mom coming here alone?
It was not.
Okay.
No, definitely not. Mm-hmm. She came here to heal, I would assume.
Okay.
She never really mentioned it, but I mean, she came here because she read in a newspaper that New Zealand people, citizens, can get student loan. So that it can put you through university. And she said, this is it. This is my ticket. Because otherwise, if we stayed in the Philippines, my mother's salary, she was a journalist. She was editor-in-chief of a Filipino, not Filipino, sorry, the newspaper for our little kind of town. Yeah, she was an editor-in-chief for that newspaper. And her salary was good. but it wasn't enough to put three children through university. It was barely enough to put us through school. And then, you know, my oldest brother, he was going to go to university. He was in year 13 when we left. So the next year, she would just not have anything for him. And in the Philippines, you can't even work at McDonald's if you don't have a degree.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So it's just not, we had no future if we didn't leave.
Yeah.
And I can't believe, to this day, I can't believe how brave she was to come here all by herself and three kids.
Mm.
Like, I can't fathom it to this day.
So how did you end up finding out what your dad was like? Like, when did that come out?
I didn't until... No. To me, he was really nice. When I was a child, I knew he was an alcoholic. He tried to, like, get me to drink beer just for fun. That was disgusting. I was the last girl, only girl in my family. And apparently, my dad said to my mom, this was before everything, but my dad said, if you don't give me a girl, I'll just leave you. And so when my mother found out she was pregnant, she was like, God, I hope it's a girl. And when she found out that it was, she was like, oh, good, he's going to stay. For money, I guess. Yeah. So at this point, so flash forward to my four-year-old self, it was nighttime, I heard him come home, and I was like, oh, Dad, can't really remember the rest. He just came home completely freaking hammered. And in the Philippines, guns are a thing. And he just came and he just got his gun, pointed it at my head, and was just like, I wish you'd never been born.
What?
Not freaking any clue why or anything. At that point, I was just shell-shocked. I can't even remember really what was going on at that night, other than what he had said to me. Yeah. And so that's the moment that I had found out that he was a messed up person. But my four-year-old mind couldn't comprehend that why we shouldn't be together. Mommies and daddies should be together.
Mm-hmm.
And mommies and daddies should live with their children. That's what I felt. So even though he's a bad guy, I didn't... For some reason, that act, I didn't register it as bad at the time.
Hmm.
I was kind of just freaked out. And then I was like, oh, and then I just ran off.
Okay. So he just lived with you like normal until then? Like,
yeah,
he was your dad.
Yeah,
and he was fine.
He wasn't really around.
Okay.
So he would sometimes be there and sometimes not. I'd remember thinking, oh, daddy's home, cool. And then, like, I get lifted up onto his shoulders, and then that would be cool. And then it's dinner time. And then I just go about my child ways. But I didn't remember him really being around. Like, when children talk about, I mean, not children, sorry, when people talk about their parents, you know, oh, I remember my dad would build me this thing, my dad would take me out and teach me how to ride a bike. That shit never happened for me. I taught myself how to ride a bike. I stole a neighborhood kid's bike, and I just rode it for hours. I rode it the whole day until I was covered in bruises.
And then, oh my God.
I learned how to ride a bike. And I got home, and I was like, I ride a bike. I know how to do it. And they're like, wow, how'd you do it? I was like, I stole a kid's bike, and I did it. That's what happened.
Oh my God. You must be, like, the only person who's done that.
One of my proudest moments looking back. Yeah I'm always like, I taught myself how to ride a bike. Because when I was teaching my little brother how to ride a bike, because both my parents, my mom and my stepdad, work full time. And, like, bikes are important. So they bought him a bike for his birthday, but nobody had the time to teach him. So I would take him out after school and I'd teach him, and I'd be like, yo, this is hard. Like, I'm teaching you how to ride a bike. I was like, bro, to my little brother, I was like, I learned how to ride a bike by myself. And he was just like, oh, that's amazing. How did you do that? That's impossible. I was like, I don't know, but I was covered in bruises.
Yeah.
I love my little brother so much.
Do you feel like maybe you get to kind of undo the way that you were brought up in some ways by looking after him?
Certainly, yes. Mm-hmm. Giving him... I think humans are just like that in general, I guess, right? They don't want to perpetuate or repeat the bad things and negativity that they'd felt. So one thing I was very careful of with my little brother is that if he were ever to do art, I would praise him, sure. But same as what my big brothers did to me was we would always give him advice to improve. Because whenever we showed art to my mom or my stepdad, they'd be like, oh, this is so nice, this is perfect, oh my gosh, well done, you're so fantastic. Mm-hmm. But they'd never really give you anything else to go off of. And then at that point, you know, you reach a certain age and you know that your parents are just saying that for just to get you out of their face. Like, hey, that's nice, okay, now go. You know? So I was just like, oh man, I want to give my brother something that'll actually help him for his life.
Mm.
Like, yes, this is good, but how can I improve it? And he's like that now. Maybe too much. But all of us are, me and my siblings. We always want to improve. And things are just never good enough for all of us.
Oh, wow. I see. Yeah. I guess, yeah, it's nice to give feedback, because when you give someone something, in some ways you just want them to see it.
Mm.
Like, we kind of interpret that as, like, you want them to compliment it.
Mm.
But that's not necessarily what you want. And if you give really good feedback in a good way,
yes,
it shows, you know, I have really looked at it.
I'm not telling you, hey, this is nice, now get out of my face. I'm telling you, hey, this thing is really interesting. I'm surprised that you're able to do it. Or anything. Has provoked my thought, or that this is worth my attention, and here's what I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you kind of, because, you know, after a time, you equated what your siblings would do for each other with, like, good.
Yes.
You know, like, good is, like, a little bit of criticism, and this is what you could improve, and then it grew to be kind of part.
Yeah. I feel like all of our siblings feel like they're never good enough.
Mm.
Maybe not my oldest brother, because he doesn't give a crap about anything, because he's so staunch like that. But yeah, my brother, my middle brother and my youngest brother, probably we all feel like that. Like, we're trying really hard, and we're just never there. Yeah. It's weird. Is that a thing? Like, what about you? Do you ever feel like that? Do you feel like you're never there?
No.
Really?
I've never felt like that. I don't think I have a strong sense of what I want to be like, or at least I find, I'm not sure, maybe sometimes I think that some people I know are perfectionists, but they're not ever really sure what they want to be like. It's kind of like this inbuilt not good enough, and what I would always do is have a vision in my mind of what I want to be like, or at least if I ever find myself thinking, oh, this isn't good enough, like, oh, how would I rather have it, and then I can work on getting towards that place. But I also always try and keep mainly in mind the steps that I've already taken
to No, that's the hardest part. That's exactly it. That's what took me a very long time to come to terms with. I would always belittle the journey because of the lack of result. For example, if I tried to lose weight, I wouldn't think about how strong I'd gotten. I wouldn't think about how far I could run, how long I could run compared to before. I would just think the numbers on the scale hasn't moved. And that irritates me.
So
that's a big thing, and I'm still trying to come to terms with that to this day. But every day I try to think about a little bit something like that. Hey, you know, yesterday I'm still better than today I'm better than yesterday.
I think for me, I think even I have this kind of thing where I try and get enjoyment from weird places. Like, even when Twyla had cancer, there were parts of that that I enjoyed. You know, like, I wasn't happy that it was happening. But, yes. And it sounds weird, but I try and keep an open mind. And I give myself a lot of leeway in what I define as enjoyment, because I've realized that there is satisfaction to be gained from, like, odd things. And so, you know, you could be, you know, dieting. And I do love eating ice cream and stuff, so I'm actually really bad at dieting. But, like, when I do get into it, and I have in the past as well, you start to feel strong. There starts to be a kind of satisfaction that you can gain from being like, nah, I'm not going to eat that, even though I'd get pleasure from that, because I get pleasure also from just this. Being a strong person.
Yes.
And so I try and do it for that feeling, not for the results.
That's amazing. So how did you do that in terms of, you know, coping with Twyla and cancer and things?
I guess it was just an opportunity to be... I've thought a lot about this, because I remember when she first got diagnosed, like a few days after, I met up with this friend. She was working. She worked in a mall. So I went to the mall, and then we just kind of... I told her that Twyla had cancer. And then we kind of hugged, and we had a nice conversation. And then we were just both, like, kind of crying in the middle of the shopping mall with all these people walking past. It was kind of a surreal situation. And then we went and got coffee together, and we talked a little bit more. And when I was walking home, I remember I was like, I walked home for like an hour and a half just because I like walking and I didn't want to take the bus. I just kind of kept like crying on the side of the road, but also feeling really happy. I was like, why is this happening? Like, why am I so sad? But also, like, there's a part of me that is really happy at what just happened.
Ah, about the conversation and about the surreal situation.
It was kind of the idea. I think there were lots of things, but one of them was that, you know, normally you're like, oh, let's catch up for coffee, but you never actually do.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that, you know, when Twyla got diagnosed, there were lots of people that, you know, everyone started reaching out to each other and being like, let's just hang out and be together and all experience people, this together.
Yeah, all the people that Twyla brought together.
Yeah. And she brought so many people together. And, like, all of my good friends now are just basically people that I talked to at her funeral when I was like standing there and I looked around and I realized all of these people are so great and she attracted all of these amazing people to be in her life.
What a legacy.
Yeah. And so like by the time, because I mean we had like a few months to kind of come to terms with the fact that she was gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time she really did, I was actually just sad because I thought I might lose these people.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I wanted them to stay in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had accepted that Twyla wasn't going to be in my life, but I realized, oh shit, when she dies, I'm not just going to lose her. I'm going to lose all of these people that she's just brought into my life, mm-hmm. like, that I ended up spending so much time with while she was sick. So I, like, went around everyone at the funeral and was like, let's keep in touch, and I still want to be friends.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, like, it's so great because now I have all of these people in my life because I did open up and they opened up and mm-hmm. we just had this situation where we were forced to open up to each other.
Yeah.
And it created so much connection.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a perfect example of how adversity can do two things, you know, take people apart or bring them together.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is to do with kind of emotions and how I'm not normally an emotional person. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of more of a problem-solving person. Mm-hmm. And I realized something about empathy,
mm-hmm.
that the type of empathy I normally do is more cognitive empathy. Like, I'll try and understand someone's point of view, see what something means for their life. Like, I'll fit it into what I know of their life story and think, okay, from their perspective, this is such a big thing because of this. And, you know, like, I see a lot of connections and things. I don't necessarily feel their feelings.
Sure.
I just imagine, oh, logically, how would they feel?
How would they react in the situation?
Yeah.
This is why they probably don't like this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, but the thing that kind of does is, you know, I think it has a lot of power to help people, and if you do it in a kind of sympathetic way, I think people still feel
they won't know
listen
yeah.
to
yeah I
like
agree
in some ways it sounds manipulative, but people don't know. Like, sometimes they don't know the difference.
No, I didn't know the difference. Oh, that's why I was very confused when you told me you didn't have feelings, you had thoughts. I was like, what? But you've been feeling all my feels this whole time. I don't understand.
Yeah.
No, but I get it now though.
Yeah, but what I realized is that, like, when I do that, I see something from someone else's perspective, and then I kind of think that I could see what they could do differently.
Mm.
I'm like, okay, this is what they want, and this is what they're doing, and it's not leading to this, but I see what they could maybe change.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they doing that?
Yeah. Oh, you told me about this, and how it frustrates you. Yeah.
And the thing, I think, is that, like, if you're emotionally empathetic, it's like, you've got your feelings, and I'm feeling your feelings.
Yeah.
And we're connected.
Yeah.
But my type of empathy, even though it's good and it's helpful, is like, there are things that I can see that you're not seeing and I don't understand.
Yeah.
And that's no connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized that when Twyla got diagnosed and people were sad about it, I was sad about it. That was the first time that I'd ever had the same thing going on in my mind as in someone else's mind.
Mm.
And that, like, it was feeling that connection and my brain was like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And it was making me happy in this small, obscure, weird way.
That so, makes sense. That's amazing. That's so cool.
Finding enjoyment in odd places.
People should do that, though. I'm sure we do.
Yeah.
But I would like to be more conscious of that in my life.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, I didn't feel comfortable expressing that. Mm. Like, I couldn't really tell anyone, oh, I'm actually really happy that Twyla's dying of cancer because I am feeling more connected
you guys,
to people.
Yeah.
You know, like, I even had trouble admitting it to myself. Mm-hmm. And I think often we have this
wall in our mind against enjoying something that we see as unpleasant.
Yes, that's right, that we shouldn't be enjoying.
Yeah.
You just think, socially, this is not acceptable, therefore I should not be enjoying this. The fact that I'm enjoying this makes me a messed up person. So.
Mm. Yeah. Whereas, I think if you can find happiness in a weird place, take it. Because we all need more happiness. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm. Fair point.
Yeah. What you said about coping with adversity, like how you looked after your brother because you were sort of making up for your childhood.
At first it started as I had to. Mm-hmm. And then I just fell for him. Just an amazing kid. But at first I'd be like, why me? This isn't, when it first happened, when I found out that my mom was pregnant, I was really happy and all. But when he actually came into the world, I realized all of these things that I now had to do. Changing diapers 5 times a day, all the diarrhea explosions everywhere. And I was just thinking, why me? What did I do to deserve this? This is not my problem. This is not my responsibility. How dare she even? I blame my mother. Why don't you just practice safe sex or something? I don't know. It's just why me? Why do I have to deal with this? I'm 10 years old. Leave me alone. I just want to go play with my friends. But then after that, I just realized as my little brother would get older, he would actually look towards me and my brothers. He would listen to us if we would say something, but my mom would always coddle him. She would dote on him, give him everything he wanted as a kid, and that would make me feel really, really jealous. But one time, my little brother and I think he was 8 at the time, we just had a huge heart-to-heart in his room, and he was telling me about how shit it made him feel that he could see that my stepdad and my mother were not treating everybody else the same way, and that he felt guilty for all of the things they'd done for him that they would never do for us. And that's when it clicked. And I was just like, dude, no, we love you so much. We would do anything for you. But he was just like, no, it's just not fair. Why don't they love you guys and all this thing, you know? And I was like, no, they love us. But, you're the last child and you came at a time where you shouldn't have come. But despite that, you still made us all so happy. And, I know that's why I guess I love him so much. Because it was hard, man. Those are hard times. One time we got caught. My mom was in her night shift. My younger brother needed something. I think he ran out of either nappies or child formula. So my big brother, at the time, I told you he didn't have a license. This was during high school. He was like, okay, let's just go to the supermarket and go get some stuff. So me, my middle brother, younger brother, and oldest brother all in the car, and he's driving us to Pack and Save. He doesn't know how to drive, he's just driving. And we get stopped by the police. And the police is like, bro, where's your license? What are you guys doing? Just driving a car, you guys are messed up. Where's your mom? And we're like, no, please, we don't. We're just trying to get some formula and some nappies and stuff. My mom is working night shift. There's nothing we can do and blah, blah, blah. Please help us. And the officer was like, oh! So he writes a ticket anyway. But he's like, just don't do it again. So, so we got home and we told our mom. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, my kids. And she just, hugged us for the shit that we went through. But all of that, crazy stuff, super crazy stuff, brought us all together. We had to bond as a family. And that's why I remember telling you guys, it's for my brothers and I, it's always been us against the world. We're always going to be together no matter what. Even if our parents are gone, it's always us. And we'll do anything for each other. Maybe my big brother not so much because he doesn't care about anyone, but immediately serving his needs. But yeah, we're just so bonded like that. We just went through so much crap that all of the happiness, all of the sadness, all of it rolled into one was us. And everything we went through and how far we've come, we're so proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's so unique. I can't imagine, most 8-year-olds I know. I'm treated differently to everyone else and this isn't fair.
I know. It was huge for me. That's why I was so angsty as a kid, because I was just like, why me?
Yes. Yeah.
Why did it have to be me? Why do my friends get to go and do all this shit? How come my friends can just, get money from their parents? They can just be like, Mom, I need to go shopping. Can I have $100? And they just get $100. For me, it's like, Mom, no. $2? Okay. Like, what do you want? Yeah, $1, sure. And it's like, oh, there's a thing with $1, but okay, thank you, Mom.
Yeah.
Like, I would remember, you know, my friends would come to school with, like, all these homemade lunches and all this. And we would either not get lunch, get money for lunch, or when my mom has a day off, she would make us lunch. But the lunch she would make was bread, jam, cheese, and just that. And that's fine, no worries, you know, I'm all good with it. But the thing I hated the most was she would have a loaf of bread saved full of crusts. She would take all the crusts and put it in a loaf, and she would take all the normal bread and give it to my youngest brother, my baby brother, and then everybody gets the crusts. So I would come home, like, I would, you know, I'd be like eating my lunch, I'm like, ugh. I hate crusts, Mom. Like, why do I have to eat the crusts? Can't other people eat the crusts sometimes? And I would eat it. And in the middle of eating it, I would imagine my mom's smiling face while she made it. You know, hey, Ketanya's going to eat this meal that I made for her. Like, even if it's crusts, you know. So I would just be like, okay, Mom, thank you. And even if I hated crusts so much, I would never think of throwing it away. Even if I didn't want to eat it at all, I'd be like, oh, if I throw it away, I can imagine my mom's smiling face.
Oh,
and I would never throw it away.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe you guys were more aware because your mom raised you to sort of be aware of things like the bills?
Certainly, and, yes. Yeah. I would always know, and that was a thing. Like, I would always tell, you know, my best friend. I would tell Saba, hey, we're having trouble with the bills this month and all this stuff. And that's when I met Alistair. Alistair had a almost complete opposite upbringing as me.
Mm.
And I felt like I almost had resentment.
Mm.
Like, you guys had a family. You had a mother and father. You had Christmas gifts. You had aunties and uncles coming for your birthday. We had none of that. And yet, you guys aren't close. You know, what is wrong with you people? Is what I felt.
Mm.
But, it took me a really long time to understand that. Different families grow up in different ways.
Yeah, and also that adversity makes you close.
Yeah.
Like, if you're able to deal with that together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I remember Alistair telling me that his parents would never tell him anything about the bills. Never, ever. They wouldn't even tell him about who they're voting for. Nothing. Just go be kids, and we do our thing. And later on in life, when he was maybe 18 or 19, he found out once or twice that his parents, on multiple occasions, didn't have enough money to put bread on the table. Like, they had, I don't know, 10? They had 10 siblings, brothers and sisters, 11 people. Yeah, it's huge. And none of the siblings would have felt that. And they take each other for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, everybody takes everybody for granted. But because of this, because you don't know what's happening behind the scenes, you will take everything for granted. Whereas with my brothers and I, even the scraps of bread, like, even if it was all of the crust saved up, some moldy, it's food. And we know we don't have the money for this, so we eat it.
Yeah.
Like, that's something, even up until now, I'm very, very conscious about taking things for granted. I don't want to ever feel like I'm taken for granted, and I never want to take anything I have for granted. Though I do, but I'm consciously, like, trying to stamp it out, like, don't do it, you know, that's so disgusting, like. Really, really hate that kind of feeling. Yeah.
Oh, there are so many interesting parallels there.
Parallels?
Yeah, just while you were speaking. I guess it's all things that you've said before, but I've never really thought about, just the idea that you were more aware, but, and that meant that you didn't take things for granted. You appreciated what your mum did.
Despite it all, eh?
Yeah.
I still find that kind of crazy.
And you have, I think, a lot of understanding for your mum.
Yeah, because I knew.
Yeah.
I could have simply resented her for the crusts that she'd given me.
Yeah.
I could have resented my little brother, but I knew everything. Like, I know my mom inside and out, and I love her despite everything. Like, there's nothing to hate at all. Even if it was hard, even if, you know, our lives became hard, like, everyone's life was hard. So, that was that.
Yeah.
So that's why when I was asked, you know, hey, isn't your mom, like, a really horrible person? I was like, no way!
Yeah.
I love my mom so much, no matter what. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like, when I met Twyla, I think I had the upbringing that she would have wanted. I think that my parents would have been the perfect parents for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my parents were so loving and always, you know, she became basically part of our family.
Because
they always, they'd always listen to us and we just watch movies or joke around. It's been the whole time, like, laughing our asses off. We kept on, like, there was this joke that if she had dinner at our place, which she did, like, at least once a week in high school, we'd, like, have multiple occasions in this one meal when we'd both have to stand up and, like, go in the bathroom because we were laughing so much that we were choking on our food.
Oh, no.
You know, she'd stay the night and we couldn't brush our teeth in the same room because we'd choke on our toothpaste. I spent the whole time laughing, like, even, you know, last year and stuff, we were still like that.
I didn't know you guys went to the same high school together.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I met her on, like, the second day of school. And yeah, we were both, like, little misfits and super shy and
That's like Sama and I. It's the exact same story. Oh, she had the upbringing that I wanted, and I was so jealous of her, so jealous. But her family welcomed me with open arms, and that's what, like, I have so many families now because of all of these things. I have her family, I have Alistair's family, I have my family, like, all of these things brought us all together, and it's beautiful.
It's a lot like Twyla, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had, like, lots of families.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I remember when she died, there were, like, I don't know, like, 14 people in this tiny little hospital room. Like, the nurse, like, came back in after about 10 minutes and was like, whoa!
Yeah, she collects families. Oh, my gosh. How beautiful.
Yeah.
Did she know?
Yeah.
Like, she knows.
Yeah.
She must have been really happy.
I think she really didn't want to die. I think even in that moment, like, it took a long time, I think, just because there were so many people.
Did it happen as in, like, we couldn't just keep her on life support anymore kind of thing, and so everybody was there when she died?
No one chose the time. I don't know, she wasn't really on life support. No one mentioned that as an option. Yeah, no, she'd been on this, like, breathing machine, and I think she still was to the same extent, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they gave her enough morphine that she fell asleep.
Yeah.
In the end. Yeah, so, like, what was difficult is I think that she didn't really want to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, she was still alive, but asleep for, like, a few hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a way. Poor Twyla.
No, we got to have this really amazing conversation just before she died, though. Like, it was with my dad, and I'll probably cry if I talk about this.
It's okay.
Like, it was really hard because we didn't want to admit that she was going to die.
Yeah.
And, like, even when we got the news that she was about to die, we still kind of envisaged that it would be a few more weeks and not just, like, two more days, which is what I ended up being.
Yeah.
And, like, up until that point, it had always been, like, oh, you'll probably get better. And we were focusing on, like, ways that she was going to get better. But that did mean that we weren't really able to talk about dying. Or, like, she'd started to ask me a few times, like, what do you think happens when you die? And we talked about writing people letters and things. But it was kind of, no one ever really wanted to think, oh, you might die really soon. Let's talk about stuff. So, I'm actually really lucky that my dad said, because he was reading on what she'd been posting on Facebook, and she was like, my dad said, I don't think that she's gonna survive tonight. Like, we should go see her. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, let's go see her. And then he brought these, like, photos that we'd had from, like, when we went camping, and we looked so bad. Like, we were all pimply and awkward the way that teenagers are. It's like, I don't even want to look at those photos.
Yes.
But it was just, it was such a surreal experience to kind of be there with, you know, her partner and my dad, and just be looking at these old photos and, like, here's that same person in, like, a hospital bed with no hair, like, looking like a cancer patient and about to die and, like, really, really thin. And we're just, like, talking about old times. But it was so special that he brought those photos because it got us to kind of just talk about the difference that we'd made in each other's lives.
How beautiful.
So, like, she talked about how much my family helped her, and then I told her how much she told me. Because, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I think so much about, like, the way that I am is the things that she inspired me to do. Yeah, it's like in my mind, if I'm ever in, like, a tough situation, it's sort of what would Twyla do? How would she deal with a situation? Because, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know the kind of person that I would be if I hadn't met her. Mm. And then even since then, like, the past year where she got sick, like, I don't know what the kind of person I would be if that hadn't happened to me either. It's like, I just can't untangle her from my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah. The other amazing thing was that when we were having that conversation about, you know, how my family helped her and what an important part she played in my family, because I think she brought us together mm-hmm. a lot as well. Like, I think my dad has always been really sensitive, mm-hmm. and I think she kind of helped him to say a lot of things, or just like having the friendship that my dad had with both of us mm-hmm. and watching us have that friendship. I think that was really important for our family in ways that I probably don't even understand because I've only ever seen my perspective. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was such a special thing as well. And while we were talking about all of that, her mum was there. Mm-hmm. And her mum kind of... she was like your mum. She did the best that she could.
Yeah.
But it was just not the right time to have kids.
Yes, you know? So yes.
She wasn't capable of looking after them.
That's right.
It sounds like your mum did a really good job.
Yeah.
And yeah, Twyla's mum. Yeah, there were a lot of things that I think she could have done differently, but I'm sure that from her perspective, it was right. the best thing that she knew how to do at the time.
And completely so agree.
There was a lot of things that Twyla never got a chance to say to her mum, because I think her mum seemed always totally oblivious to the cost of it.
I see.
And even when Twyla got sick, you know, like, it was such a hard thing because she kind of saw that as a result of her upbringing of sort of malnutrition in some ways. And, you know, it would have been things like, you know, jam sandwiches and that same thing, because, you know, you don't have enough money, you don't have enough time. And Twyla would all, she had such like a stressful childhood mm-hmm. and things, like, she'd be so scared of people being angry and little things would affect her so much. And I think, you know, like, once she got sick, it sort of made it clear what a hard life she'd had, and that her sort of succumbing to cancer in such a bad way was kind of, you know, a result of that.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And so I think she was so, like, there were so many things that she wanted her mum to understand about that, but she couldn't really make her mum believe. So I think in some ways the best thing was that her mum was there to see us talk about the difference that she made in our family and how, you know, because she wouldn't have been able to say that to her mum openly, but to just have her mum witness that, I think, would have been really special for her.
For sure. Yes.
So, yeah, it was this, like, it was just the most amazing sort of constellation of events that my dad was like, we have to go.
Yeah.
He took the photos that made us talk about different things.
Yeah.
And it made us have a conversation that I am so even in awe of the fact that I got to have in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then to have her mum be there, and, like, I think everything kind of came together. And so, yeah. Yeah, the fact that she died that night is actually kind of a good thing in some ways.
Like, yeah.
It was good that we had that before she died, and then she died then, and, yeah.
Your dad had some kind of amazing premonition.
Mm.
That's intense. Would anyone else have known, like, just looking at her Facebook posts and things?
I don't know. My dad works at the hospital, so I think he has a bit more experience of what that kind of thing looks like.
Sure. Wow, I just can't even, like...
Yeah, because, like, I had no idea. I was so in denial.
Yeah. And just being like, I don't think she's going to make it this night. Let's go now.
Yeah.
Like, dude.
Yeah, because I wasn't going to go, you know?
Yeah,
I was planning on going and doing something else and just seeing her the next day.
Yeah. I can't even say, but, like, what luck, you know, in a way, in a twisted way, what luck.
Yeah. I mean, when she died, you know, I was sad that she died, but part of it was like, I'm so happy that all of that happened just before she died. Like, I'm so happy that we gave her that goodbye. Mm. And I think given the circumstances, that was the best thing that could have happened, you know, and that was what I was so thankful for. So, like, when she died, I was just so grateful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes total sense. It starts to make me kind of ache for the people who don't have that kind of opportunity, you know?
But I realized that, you know, the fact that, you know, the fact that that did come together, that was a product of the people in her life.
Yeah.
It was a product of the connections that she was able to make with people and between people, like different members of my family. And yeah, that everything.
You never see these things until something like this happens. And be able to witness it like this as well is something that is very hard to describe to other people, but it's important to be talked about. Because, like, death, you know, when you think about it, it's such a damn morbid thing. You never want to think about it. When it happens, it's just the worst. But seeing the light in that is also really beautiful, I think. So thank you for sharing that. I've never really been afraid of death, per se, but, like, I keep thinking, if so-and-so were to go, I don't know what I would do and all of this thing. But hearing this perspective is kind of like, it's really beautiful. Like, death has never been something I've associated with beauty, you know, but the fact that humans can make it happen, you know, good things and bad things, is really nice.
I think one thing I've kind of realized is that sadness, and I actually had someone else's help, this isn't entirely my idea, but, like, sadness is not necessarily sad. You know, like, these negative feelings, they're not necessarily negative. It's that we don't often allow ourselves to feel them.
Exactly.
You know, I went to this coaching session and the guy was like, what do you tell yourself when you feel sad? And the answer is kind of, you shouldn't be sad,
because
no one's dying. Why are we sad if no one's dying? And then the thing that happens is that when people do die, you give yourself the right to feel sad. You know, it's like at a funeral, we're able to feel sad together because we can accept the fact that we feel sad. And it's like, what if we had that whenever we feel sad? Wouldn't that be great? And it's doable. We just accept the fact that, you know,
if you're sad,
everyone feels sad. Therefore, sadness must be normal. You know, we don't want to feel happy all the time. So let's accept that, like, for this day in my life, I'm going to feel sad. And then, you know, I think in the ideal world, we'd just be like, hey, Kate, I'm feeling really sad. And you would be like, oh, that's okay. I'm here. And that's fine. But what we end up is like, oh,
cheer up.
Don't feel sad. Being sad is bad.
That's right. Cheer up. What's wrong? You know, you can do it. Chin up. Smile. But turn that frown upside down. All of these things. Where all you really need is someone to hear you out.
Yeah, I try and... The other thing with Twyla was I kind of learned, I think too late, the value of being present. Like, I kept thinking, oh, I don't want to burden her. I was always aware that, you know, I'm an extrovert, I'm kind of intense. So, like, I used to, you know, talk to her a lot, the way that I always used to, but she didn't have so much energy anymore, and I'd always be kind of like, oh, I maybe shouldn't go see her because it might be too much, or she gets, like, lots of visitors from people. And yeah, like, right up until the end, I was always kind of like, oh, I'll just be careful, and, you know, let me know if you ever want me to come. But yeah, which I think was actually, you know, like, that's what I've learned, is that shouldn't be like that. I kept on thinking, oh, she's really tired. It's like, if you find out that someone might die, go and spend time with them.
That's kind of ties into me. Like, if anyone is ever sad or something, I have this huge feeling of responsibility that I need to be there for them, because if not, they just might go kill themselves. Because it's something that I've struggled with myself a lot. And if I didn't have the people around me when they were, I probably would have done it.
Just having a group hug. This is way intense for a podcast. Just paper.
But yeah, being present. That's why. I remember talking to you something about this recently, and I said, no, I really need to go home and talk to them, because
If I don't, I don't know what would happen. And if something were to happen, I would feel responsible.
Mm. Yeah.
Because, for example, like, there have been so many times where Sama was there for me. Mm. Like, in the middle of the night, in the dark hours, where, you know, thoughts just get to you. And it's hard. Or Alistair was there for me when thoughts get to me. And if that, you know, like, if I didn't have those people around me, the connections that I'd made with people, I wouldn't be here today. And that's something I'm just so grateful for, and I always want to be there for people. If that's what I mean, like, sadness is okay. It's okay to be sad. Just talk, and you'll be, and I'll be here. Everybody will be here, and don't be afraid, is something that I've learned. Because, yeah, like, there have been times, like, knife to my wrist, I'm ready. Let's do it. And if the people weren't there, if people didn't call me or threaten to call the police on me or something, I would have done it. And also thinking about the people that you would have affected with your death. Just like the way you talked to me about Twyla, like, I wouldn't have known that, you know?
Yeah.
And people who are about to kill themselves wouldn't think about that. But it's huge. That would be such a shame, to take your own life like that. And that's something I've come to terms with just recently. Like, literally just months.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is my longest time without a suicidal thought. Whereas before, it would kind of just be every month I would feel this way. And things would get to me in that way. And it's... Now I feel like I would never want to be that person who wasn't there. Because I know exactly the meaning, like, exactly the worth, the value of someone just there for you when you need them most.
Yeah, I remember now. It was because one of our friends, she was having this huge thing, a huge friendship war going on, and I was really worried about her, and I said, I'll just go home early because I don't know. If she calls or something, then I want to be there.
You can be on here too if you want.
Feel like you have to be quiet.
There's nothing about this that's too personal. I think it's an important message to be heard. Like,
yeah.
Crying and group hugs and all, it's important.
Crying is okay.
Exactly.
That's something, my boyfriend, he has this thing where he feels like he shouldn't really show emotion because it makes you feel weak if you do, but I keep trying to tell him, you know, crying is okay, crying is healthy. And I've only ever really seen him cry once, and that's because something just got way too much for him to handle. But if he had just kind of let it out a bit before, it wouldn't have been so overwhelming in the moment. And if you don't let your emotions just kind of get the better of you every now and again and just let it all out, then eventually your thoughts do just pile up to the point that you just can't handle them anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And I guess when they pile up, they do tend to be directed at someone, maybe. Mm.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if we're more comfortable with just showing emotion, like, as they are. I'm sad right now. It's not because of you, but I'm just expressing my sadness.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, it bottles up and it ends up like, oh, ah! And,
Yeah, and it ends up like, oh, why me, why me? Why am I even alive? Why do I even bother? And then you're gone. Yeah. Which was actually really nice, because today at work, people would just express that they're sad. Like, I expressed that I was sad for no reason, and everyone was okay with it. And they were just like, hey, man, you know, we're here. It's cool. You know, they weren't like, chin up. Don't be sad. Deal with it. They're just like, hey, we're here. And like, hey, you know, would this make you happier? Like, they're very sensitive. And recently, I think just this morning, someone else was like, I'm feeling really sad today. And we just talked about it. And that was okay.
Yeah.
It's so important. So, so important.
No, I feel like it's people who've actually gone through that type of sadness get it the most.
Mm.
So when you go and you say, I'm sad, they don't question you. They just leave you to it.
Nah, yeah.
And that's nice. But then you have people, the people who come to you and they're like, oh, chin up. Oh, don't worry about it. Things will get better.
It's, yeah, she'll be right.
you haven't gone through trouble, have you?
Mm.
You don't know that it's not that easy.
Or they haven't admitted it to themselves.
Yeah.
Like, they'll always say to themselves, chin up.
Yeah.
Maybe in their own private time, but they don't understand it or something.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's important that you say you're sad if you are sad and accept that you're sad because it's okay. It's totally okay.
I'd never thought of it in this way. I was listening to a podcast when they said Western culture kind of has an emphasis on problem solving.
Mm.
We're not comfortable with problems. Mm. We like to look for solutions.
Mm.
It's kind of the same thing. It's like we're not comfortable with just existing in the sadness.
Mm. Yeah. Because why are you sad? You should be moving forward with your life. It's the Hollywood dream, you know? Like, this isn't glamorized, being sad and just wallowing. You know, it's wallowing in sadness if you're just being sad. And that's totally weak. Yes. And emo and gothic and loserly.
No, bring on the wallow. Yeah. It's beautiful.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine to live it every now and again. Every couple of months or so, I have a cry at night.
Yeah.
Because stress gets
just
to
have
you.
A wallow.
Yeah. Just have a bit of a cry. And then you wake up the next morning actually feeling so much
so
better.
So much better.
Let it all out in the night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. We don't have the emotion for no reason.
Yeah.
It's good for you. It's really good for you. I think people just need to embrace it more. Not think of it as a weakness, not think of it as, oh, I'm being such a baby, but just, I'm sad, I'm crying, it's good.
Mm.
Let it out. Let out your thoughts and let it out to someone who you trust.
Exactly.
Talk to them, cry with them, and if they know you, if they love you, if they have your trust, whatever, they'll just be there as a shoulder for you to cry on. Mm. That's it. They won't look at you and be like, oh, chin up, it's
chin
fine.
Up, yeah.
They'll just hug you and just let you have your grief.
Have your cry, yeah.
Yeah.
But we were actually talking about a subject like this in class, and we were attributing it to more of a woman's thing. Having a good cry.
Mm.
And men were just like, no, I would never have a good cry. Like, if I'm crying, it's not a good thing. And we don't necessarily feel better after that. Well, I'm not really sure. I'm not a man, so I don't know, right? But,
I mean, I think if you're able to kind of give into it, that's when you feel better. It's kind of a cathartic thing. But I think if you've been brought up that you shouldn't be crying,
then you wouldn't
feel
good anyway.
Experience. Oh, it's going to be kind of mixed up with, oh my god, I can't believe I just cried.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, that was good.
Yeah. No, I see. So they should just try. Cry with an open mind and see what happens.
Yeah.
I think that's in some ways a good strategy for people who don't feel comfortable expressing their emotions. Mm-hmm. It's just like, well, we cry, like we've evolved to cry. This is something that we do, just like breathing. Like every now and then, you just cry. Because I think that, like, if you're the kind of person that is not comfortable with being sad, you're comfortable with thinking about the things that your body has evolved to be able to do and like the mechanisms that it's evolved to cope with your life. I feel like that's kind of more scientific thinking, and that's more the domain that I'm comfortable thinking with as well, which is like, oh, my body has this really clever mechanism that will make me feel better when I feel bad, so I'm gonna use it, as opposed to, oh, I'm giving in with to my emotions. Like, it's kind of a different thing, but it allows you to do the same thing.
I think people, I don't know, like, they ignore the trouble around them, and I think that's dangerous. Like, don't ignore your problems. Face them head on. Like, when you have a problem in your life, don't just think to yourself, oh, whatever,
it'll
get better. I'll just forget about it, or this person's hurting me, whatever, I'll just ignore them and stuff. Ignoring doesn't always work. Certain situation doesn't. Yeah. Again, back with my, he does this a lot. My boyfriend, like, I try to get him, like, it's okay if you don't like talking about it too much or whatever, but it kind of gets to a point where he bottles it all up inside and doesn't even want to think about it. Or when we have arguments, he's like, okay, we're going to stop talking about this and we're never going to talk about it again. Like, it doesn't work that way though if you don't try to figure it out, if you don't try to find, like, well, as you said, a kind of a solution to the problem. Sometimes it's necessary to do it, because if you just ignore it, ignoring it doesn't make it go away. Just like with your emotions, ignoring them, pretending like you're not sad, pretending like you're happy to the world, you're not going to make it go away. You're not going to make the bad feelings or the sadness go away. You're just making it grow and grow.
No way.
It's eventually going to come back. Like, just like with the arguments, you ignore the arguments. They're eventually going to come back because you didn't actually approach the problem.
That's literally what I did for, like, a quarter of my life. I'm like, I'm sad, I shouldn't be sad, I have better things to do. I'm going to ignore all of this sadness and just be a happiest person I could. And what ended up happening, and Alistair could attest to us, he would probably still have the chat logs of all of this happening, but there was a huge chasm within me where there's the happy Kate and the sad Kate. And the no-go zone between, the darkness in between, the disgusting parts, the hairy parts, the sharp parts, everything was in between. And I couldn't piece myself together.
I couldn't imagine that the sad Kate and the happy Kate were the same person. Wow. Like, that's what happened. I would bottle up all my frustrations with my family, the frustrations within myself, my expectations, why things aren't the way I wanted them to be. And it just ended up with a huge divide. And it wasn't until uni that I decided to tackle the divide and solve the problem. You know, who am I? What am I doing here? Like, what is my life about? You know, all of these damn, like, existential stuff. And it wasn't until then that I realized sad Kate and happy Kate are fine. Mm. And that was, like, I know, maybe it sounds stupid to a lot of people, but for me, that was huge. Mm. And now, like, piecing it all together, I feel so much more whole and so much more strong and ready to help people. Because what I used to do is, like, I'd give everything away to everybody if they needed it. And that would leave me with nothing, and I would feel so damn frustrated. Why isn't anybody returning the favor? I wish they would do the same for me, but they won't, but it's okay. Well, keep giving, keep giving, keep giving. Happy Kate keeps giving. Sad Kate is just like, well, you know, in the dark of night, this is me. And I didn't know who I was. Yeah, it was a huge struggle. Because I kept, you know, looking for all the role models in the video games and TV shows that I watch, and I'm like, they're happy all the time. Why can't I be happy all the time? They deal with their problems, so can I. But I ignored everything that was going on inside me. And it was so harmful. Mm. And if your boyfriend keeps doing that, it's just going to be the same thing for him. Well, maybe not, but I don't know. That's what happened to me.
No, I think he's just that type of person who doesn't like to talk about it until that point where he needs to talk about it.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
So if you're that type of person, that's fine. But then at the same time, don't ignore it until it's too late.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why sometimes I try to push him. Mm. Like, just talk to me.
You need someone to push you.
Yeah, because I know when it's kind of getting to him, when he doesn't even really talk that much, when he goes quiet, when he's just doing his own thing, and, like, when I try to, you know, get lovey-dovey with him or whatever, and he's just like, not right now. You know, that's when I know it's getting too far. Just talk to me.
And how lucky he is, and how lucky I am to have had people like that.
And it's sad that some people aren't that lucky.
Right, exactly. That's what saddens me the most about the world.
Some people just don't have that person. It's terrible.
Like, we could all just as easily be that for each other.
Yeah.
But we're not.
Yeah. Sometimes it's even a stranger, Eric. And I remember,
Yeah.
One time, I think she got the wrong number. She was trying to text someone else, but she ended up sending me a text, and it was this really long, depressing text, and I just texted her back. I was like, I think you have the wrong number. And she's just like, oh, sorry, ignore that text then. But I texted her back, and I was like, no, it's okay, just talk to me. And she was just so shocked. She was like, why would you even want to talk to me? You don't even know me. And I'm like, so what? You clearly need a friend. Just talk to me. What's wrong? And we texted, I think, for about 2 months after that, where she would just come to me with her problems, and I would just text her back. Because she clearly needed someone at the time, and she didn't have anyone, or else she wouldn't have been texting a random stranger. But if you get someone like that in your life, don't just turn them away.
Yeah. Yes. Don't miss the opportunities. Be present.
That's an amazing story. Yeah. That's so great.
I see all the time, like, if you're walking down the street and you see someone who's clearly not happy, or somebody just wants to come talk to you, whatever.
Just smile.
Just talk to them. Because you don't know what's going on in their life. Maybe them talking to a random stranger is the highlight of their day that makes them feel like I can get through the next day.
Yeah.
You know, don't mock them. Don't laugh at their face. Don't just turn around and ignore them. What's it going to kill you to just give them a smile and a hello? Honestly, it's not the end of the world.
And it goes back to what we were talking about before. Everybody's got a story, literally. And it could just as easily be you on the other side of the lens. So just do it. Like, nothing's going to happen. Ask someone how their day is. Tell someone that you like their face. I don't know. Like, do something.
Your face. That's true.
There was a nice website I found, I forget what the address was, but it was something to do with venting. And so, like, you can volunteer to kind of listen to someone talk to you about their problems. Basically, you know, doing what you did with text, but on a website.
I'm pretty sure I've heard of that website as well. Yeah, people volunteer and they go on, and you just get paired up with someone.
Yeah.
And you just listen to someone, and you're like, yeah, man, you're all good.
Yeah.
Like, tell me more. Oh, that sucks.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
Wow. It's so useful, eh?
Because at least you know there's somewhere you can go to vent.
Yeah. Because I was watching a YouTuber that was talking about that and her struggles with suicide. Mm-hmm. And how, first of all, she used to be like a regular on the site, venting all the time. And then eventually, you know, when that person had helped her and all the random people that had helped her, she found herself, she pieced herself together, and now she's doing the same. So she's on the website helping other people. Like, it just, pay it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's so amazing. That's like what you said about, you know, the people that you talk to who will accept your sadness. Mm. They're the people who have been through a similar thing.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because they understand what you're saying. I think talking to someone who doesn't understand where you're coming from is just as bad as... Mm. You might as well just not talk to them at all because they don't know.
Mm. It's like pushing a cart sideways sometimes, yeah.
Or at least they're not sure how to react.
Yeah.
Because we're not taught how to react to someone being sad.
Mm.
Like, true. I had a really sheltered life, and so I didn't know either. Oh. Like, it wasn't that, you know, like, I just didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to treat someone if they're depressed.
Right.
Like, that, now I understand you are present, and you don't expect anything of them, and you let them know that you value them as a person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, that's something that I've had to learn. But I think it would be so great if in schools we taught someone what to do when their friend is depressed. Because, you know, we have a lot of... oh, if you're depressed, you should seek help. You should call these counselors. You should go to someone. But we don't teach people what to do if a friend of theirs is depressed. Mm-hmm. We target the people who are actually depressed.
Yeah.
But if you target everyone else,
mm-hmm.
there's so much more of a chance of it getting to that depressed person.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Alistair is the same as you. He had a sheltered lifestyle too. Mm. And when I was sad, he would just be like, you should go see someone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to see someone. I've seen someone. They say the same damn thing and they don't know who I am. Like, that's it.
But he's probably thinking, oh, I don't know
how
to help.
Exactly.
Other people will know how to help.
Yeah, he had a sheltered childhood too, just the same. His family would never let him know anything. Not about bills, not about money. I think he said for a very long time in his life he didn't know how to tell the time. Because they just didn't. Like, they don't count money, nothing. So yeah, he wouldn't have known what to do. And in that situation, I was frustrated that he didn't understand, that he didn't want to help me, and I didn't understand that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can't fault him for it.
No, definitely.
He just didn't know anybody.
He just, exactly, like what Katie said.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not taught to cope with these things.
Yeah.
So for you, a person who's going through it, it's the worst thing talking to someone who doesn't understand. Mm. But for them, it's like they just don't know.
They want to help you, but they don't know how.
To help you.
Yeah. That's rough as well.
Yeah. You know, it's uncomfortable because you kind of feel like the person has come to you to have a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Like you feel bad not offering a solution.
Yeah.
And you end up feeling like, I always used to listen to Twyla and I never thought that it helped. I got frustrated with myself. And it wasn't when she was diagnosed, it was a bit before that, but she was just mentioned somehow, like offhand, that it always used to make her feel better to talk to me. And I was like, really? I had no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I was always like, oh, we stayed up all night talking, and then the next day the problems would be the same, you know? I never imagined that I helped at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if I'd known that I was actually helping just by listening, I think I would have been so much more open.
Mm.
But I ended up being kind of like, oh, she, you know, she talks to me, and then you don't help, and it kind of put me off talking to her about things like that, because I thought... it's not helping.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I shouldn't listen because it doesn't seem to help at all.
Mm.
I may as well just not
listen.
I may as well just not talk to her because it's not having any effect.
Mm.
And so I think, you know, she didn't know any better either, but it's also really great to be like, thank you, this helped a lot.
Mm.
Or like, if you were sad and someone listened, then a bit later, be like, hey, you remember when I was sad and you listened? Thank you so much. That was exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
Because otherwise we
wouldn't have known that. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would still go about your life and be like, damn, I don't even know what was the point of that conversation because the problems are still there.
Yeah.
Fair point. Really, really good. Because I think that's what someone at work said this morning when I just listened to their problem and just gave them some opinions based on my, like, experience. She was like, thank you so much.
Mm.
That really helped. You really, I'm not in my funk anymore. And I was like, great. I was just talking to you.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't have known if she didn't say. It would have just been a random conversation that I had and forget about it.
Yeah, it's enough. When you're when you're going through a bad time, you just need to talk to someone and have them listen. It's enough.
Mm.
You don't really need more than that in the end. You just need to know that there is someone there if you need someone.
Mm-hmm.
That's honestly it.
And how beautiful it is that we have people. And that there are ways, if you don't have someone immediately, that you can just reach out and there will be people. Like, it's starting to become a thing, which is great.
Yeah.
It's a ball, like, it's a ball rolling. Is that the phrase?
It's got the ball rolling.
Yeah, it's got the ball rolling, yeah. People are a lot more open about depression and mental illness now anyway, more than they've ever been.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's still more things we can do.
I listened to a podcast on suicide.
Mm.
It was quite interesting. The lady was saying what we need to do to people who we think might be suicidal is thank them for staying alive.
Yeah, because
I think what you said before about how people mean so much to other people and we don't normally talk about it unless someone, you know, gets cancer and is going to die, and then it suddenly comes out how much we all mean to each other.
Yeah.
But like, if we make more of an effort to remind ourselves and each other how connected we really are and how much we need each other.
Yeah.
I think in my darkest moments it was that that actually kept me going.
Yeah.
So Alistair would just say things like, I don't know what I would do if you weren't here, or things like that. And it would make me think, it really would. I'd be like, wow, all this time I thought if I weren't here, life would go on and everything would be okay. Nobody would give a shit. One day for a funeral and that's that. But the more it happened, the more I learned that there's more to it than that.
Which I guess is the nice thing about valuing presence
rather
than happiness and like fun times.
Mm-hmm.
We have this thing that like
it
counts if you can put it on Facebook and we're all smiling. God. But like, then the problem is that if you're going through a tough time
and you're not smiling,
you're like, not worth it. I'm not helping anyone. Like, I'm not giving anyone any laughter. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I may as well not be here because I'm not offering anything.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like, thank you for existing, even though you're not that happy, thanks for just being around.
Yeah, that was huge.
It makes
for me.
that meaningful.
Yeah.
That just being able to exist. Thanks for existing.
Thanks as well. For you guys, for existing. Like, it's what makes life worthwhile. And every morning when I walk to work, I think of these things and I'm like, damn, you know, life is worth living. And I would have missed it. And I didn't. And I'm so grateful every day.
Yeah.
Even though I hate that hill walking up to work, like, every morning I still think about it.
Yeah. The other message in that podcast was, have some respect for your future self. And I liked that. It's like, future you might figure out stuff that present you doesn't know. If you hang in there, like, give your future self a chance.
Some credit.
To figure out that this is maybe okay.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. Like, if I could go back to my future self, I'd say exactly these things. And I'd be like, I figured it out. So put that knife down.
Yeah.
Calm down, dude. You can do this.
Yeah. What advice would you give to your past self? Like, what specifically would you say?
I would say exactly what Sama was kind of saying before. Don't bottle things up and don't put yourself in a box. Don't expect things of yourself that you can't give. Don't expect anything of anyone, but do your best and just accept yourself. It's difficult, man. Like, when you reach some points where you fail, you know, people fail you, you fail yourself, it starts to become very difficult. But accept that you can make mistakes. Accept that people make mistakes. Choose love. Just do it. Don't box yourself up into things that people expect you to be. Don't box yourself up into what you expect yourself to be. Just do you. And love yourself. In every option, just love. That's what I would say. There's nothing else anybody needs but love.
Mm.
And you can't give love if you don't love yourself. And that was a big problem for me. I would expect myself to be able to be there for everybody. And then I would face the inner conflict of, I don't even love myself. The person who's looking at me in the mirror, screw that, you know? You're worthless, you're a failure. But if I had chosen love, I would have done me first. Do what makes me happy. Sometimes maybe not be there for some people that won't be grateful for you. But
be there for people after you've taken care of yourself first. Because that's what really messed me up. Like, I would have all these things on my mind, and then people would pop up. They've got problems. I put everything, you know, in a box, sort, you know, neatly tucked away into my heart. Sort those people out. Once they're okay, maybe attempt the box or get a bigger box for the bigger things that are piling up. And just don't do that. Just realize that you're worth the time. Realize that people need to understand that. And just realize that you're beautiful. But at the same time, I don't regret any of it. Because everything that I've ever struggled with has made me who I am.
It's your past that defines you.
So, like, even if I had a time machine, I wouldn't even change it. There's other things I could do. So I'm really happy with it. But, yeah, if I could, I would say it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anyone should change their past, because it defines you.
Mm.
You're not who you are today without your past.
Yeah. Like, own it. Be happy with it.
Exactly. Mm.
Not even the ugly parts. I'm really happy about my ugly parts. If I didn't know about my ugly parts, I wouldn't know about the beautiful parts. And I wouldn't know about what makes me me. So before, I would hide that stuff away, you know? Pretend it never happened, pretend it wasn't there because it wasn't beautiful. It wasn't what I wanted to be. It wasn't what I expected to be. It was weak. It was ugly. Mm. But no, that's not what you need to do.
I think one important thing I've learned is that people have traits, and I have traits.
Mm.
So, like, what I've previously seen as, you know, these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses. I need to use my strengths and hide my weaknesses or, like, minimize them.
Mm-hmm.
It's now like, oh, I have traits.
Traits.
They manifest themselves, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a bad way. And so now when I find them manifesting themselves in a bad way, it's like, oh, well, this, you know, this comes from this place that also allows me to do this.
Yeah.
And if I didn't sometimes do this, I wouldn't be able to do this as well.
Right.
Mm. And so I try and use those traits in a good way.
Yes.
But, you know.
Accept your traits. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Don't think of it as strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
Because it's huge. When you're at school, they're just like, oh, what are your strengths and weaknesses? Yes. Write it on your CV. You think about these things and it really gets to you. Because nobody wants to have weaknesses.
Yeah.
But when you think of them as traits, it's a lot more, I wouldn't say a lot more positive, but it's freeing.
I realized that actually in that hospital room when Twyla was dying, like, I was looking around at everyone and they were so sad. Like, everyone was sitting around being sad, and I realized that I didn't have any feelings in that moment. Mm-hmm. And that's always been my weakness, is that I watch the people and the feeling thing, it doesn't happen. I'm like, is there something wrong with me? Like, everyone else is sad right now, and I'm just kind of sitting there twiddling my thumbs because we've been sitting here for hours. Like,
I don't know.
Yeah,
my boyfriend, he's the same, where when people, because, you know, he's experienced quite a bit of death too.
Okay.
And whenever people talk about it, whenever he, like, you know, experiences more death around him, he's just kind of shut off to it. He doesn't really acknowledge it. He doesn't really think about it. I don't think that's a weakness. I think it's just your... This is going to sound terrible, but you're kind of... You're used to it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
so it hits you hard, but you've experienced it before, so it doesn't hurt you as hard as it would have before.
Yeah, yeah.
That's just what I think it is. I don't see it as a weakness. It just, people react to... Yeah. Horrible situations like that in different ways. Some people cry their balls out, some people scream, some people just stay silent. I've never in my life seen my dad cry. Even when his sister died, I remember when I was young, he never shed a tear. His brother was crying his heart out, was screaming his heart out. My dad was just sitting in a corner completely silent. Or when his dad died, he was still going around the house acting completely normal. It's just how you handle it. So
yeah.
I wouldn't see it as a weakness if I were you, because it's not.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't feel bad about it, that everyone around you was crying and you were just
doing it. Yeah.
It's not wrong.
Yeah.
It's not wrong.
Yeah. So yeah, I kind of, yeah, I felt a bit weird for like a little bit. And then I realized, you know, this is, you know, I have this wall against my sadness. I can't seem to be able to access it right now.
Yeah.
But I realized, like, you know, how can I use that wall in a good way? And then I went up. I had someone, and I thought about what they needed to hear in that moment, which was that they had done everything that they could and it wasn't their fault. And they said that, and I realized that, like, the fact that I had that wall against my sadness meant that I could try and focus on someone else and give them what they needed instead of just looking after myself. And I was like, oh, okay, this wall, you know, it's not necessarily a weakness. It's something that I have that I, you know, sometimes it makes me unempathetic or like I don't understand people, but I can also use that to help people as well.
When they need you,
like,
yeah.
It's neutral. It can be a good thing or a bad thing, and I'm going to use it.
This is a dark podcast. Were you guys planning for
this? This is going down. We knew it. I don't care. Yeah.
Being like, oh, what are we going to talk about? Should we decide in advance what we're going to talk about?
No. I want to talk about your relationship. Yeah. Talk about your culture.
This is what happens every time I'm somewhere, though. Like, when I'm somewhere that wants to hear, like, with some people that are there and they're ready to hear it, it's coming out. Like, and I was actually telling Alistair, like, I hope this topic does come up because people need to hear it. And I don't care if I'm crying. I don't care if I sound like a mess. It's freaking important. Like, actually.
Yeah.
Been there. Done that. You need it. People need this. People need people.
People need to hear that there are others going through tough times too, so that you remember you're not alone.
That's the worst part.
Yeah. Feeling like you're alone. Yeah.
Feeling like nobody can help you, feeling like you're not worth it, feeling like nobody wants to help you. I know it's illogical now, but that's totally the kind of shit that goes through your mind, and that nobody would care. Especially for me. Like, for some reason, I don't know, I feel so demented thinking of that now, but I felt like nobody would care. Like, two people would show up at my funeral and be like, meh, and just go. Like, actually, that was how... Right? Like, isn't that ridiculous? But in that moment, that's how I felt. And if I didn't have anyone to, you know, to comfort me or anyone to say that that's not true, you know, I would have done it.
It's easy to get so caught up in kind of the mentality.
Yeah.
You know, I think so often sadness is caused by the way that we're thinking about ourselves.
Yes.
It's not even anything in our lives.
No, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. It's all you. It's all the thoughts you give yourself.
Yeah. It's your self. Yeah. Self-talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even when people are around you bullying you or whatever, at the end of the day, it's you who affects you.
Mm.
And if you think and you take into account, like, if somebody says you're worthless and you believe that you're worthless, then that's you.
That's you.
That's not them. Because you could easily just turn to them and be like, no,
I'm not.
I'm better than you.
Yeah.
And just have that strength. But no, it's easy to let those things just get to you, and then you bring yourself down and you think, no, exactly. I'm not worthless. No one would show up to my funeral. Uh-huh. No one would care.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just you, like what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm. Like, it feels really ridiculous, but it's delusional.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's delusion. All of these sadness, flurry of emotion.
Yeah. How do you think you got out of that loop? Like, can you remember what?
Yes, I can.
What changed that?
Yeah. So I was crying in bed. I don't know why. Something happened. I can't remember what it was. I was crying in bed. We were still in our old apartment, Alistair and I. And, you know, it was a switch. Came on, and I was just in that flurry of emotion. And then Alistair was just holding my racking body. And for some reason, there was a switch in my mind, and I realized I was worth life. And this guy loved me. Everybody loves me. My family loves me. And then I realized that everything I had been saying was just directed towards myself. It was just me, and nobody thought that. And then so I told Alistair, when he wasn't even believing me when I said, but I was like, I've got it. I just kept telling him. I was like, I've finally got it. He's like, got what? He was so mad at that point because he was just ready. Probably ready for me to just jump off the apartment balcony. It was that, you know, that kind of moment. And I had just so come to terms with my own death. Like, really imagined it and really lived it for many nights. And then it just became so real to me that when it came to actually doing it, I saw a flash, just my family's faces. Sama's face, Alistair's face, everybody. And then it clicked that I'm not alone, and that everything I had gone through and everything I'd been thinking about myself was self-constructed based on the things that I wasn't able to solve. And all of the times I had failed, and all of the times people had failed me. But I realized that people would always be there.
and that love was real. Because for such a long time I didn't believe it. And that was the moment. Like, I didn't believe in love. Because my own father couldn't even love me. Or rather, I don't know him. And he pointed a gun to my head. So I didn't choose to live. But this is how you treat your daughter. There can't be love between this. You know, your parents are supposed to love you unconditionally. And that's where it all kind of stemmed from. And with Alistair, who was basically my first love, every time he said he'd love me, I would say it back, but I wouldn't really know what I'm saying. And it took me such a long time to figure out what is love. And I would ask him all the time, what do you mean by I love you? What is love, like, even? And I would argue with him about it, and I'd just be like, I don't know, like, what's the point in even saying you love me when there's no such thing as love? All the time. It would be a huge thing throughout high school, throughout university, throughout all of our time together, up until this year. I would argue with him about love. And say, don't even bother saying you love me if you don't know what love is, pretty much. Like, I'd just be that kind of prickly ass, like, annoying kind of lady that you can't say you love. But yeah, it was that moment. It was a moment of clarity. I remember defining it to Alistair in that time. I was like, I've just had a moment of clarity. I can see everybody that loves me. And there's no reason why they do what they do.
Well, no, there are a million reasons. Okay.
But there's no specific, like, oh, you know, X, Y, Z, this is the formula of love, like, you know? Because that's what I was searching for, like,
okay.
I was just searching for a way to quantify and a way to make and a way to prove love. But I didn't realize that love was proved in all the different ways. It was just such a twisted time. I can't even really... I guess I've just not had enough space from that time that... I don't really know. I haven't really thought about it too much. About how I got to that point where I thought that there was no love. I can't even think if I really believed that. Or if I was just hurt. I don't really know.
Yeah. I think all of these words like love, you know, that depends on the love that we've received
right.
in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Things like respect, like people who respect other people in the way that they've been respected.
Yeah.
These aren't things that you just learn or pick up. They're things you need to be shown. You need to be shown love, you need to be shown respect, or else you'll never know what they actually are or what they mean.
That's right. I was just a slow learner.
No. You didn't have good examples.
I probably did. I think I just let hatred blind me. Hatred and maybe, like, I don't know if it's like self-pity, but like the feeling of why me? Like, why did it have to be me of all people?
But I think that that's understandable. You know, you were surrounded by all of these other 10-year-olds who didn't have to do this. Like, why me? That's not a hateful question. Like, that's totally reasonable.
Yeah,
like, why me when not these other people, when you can directly compare the what, you know, the work that they do at home versus the work that you do? Like, yeah, I know you're the type of person who's, you know, such a perfectionist.
Yeah.
So I think it would make sense for you to feel like love needs to be earned.
Mm.
Yeah. And not just unconditional.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. It did not compute in my head, which is why I was like, what do you mean by love? Just tell me exactly what you mean by you love me, and then maybe I'll accept it. But I don't understand. I wouldn't have understood, I wouldn't have understood it if someone just said they love me and not given me a reason. Like, I don't really know about unconditional love until I really thought about it, until that moment of clarity. But I didn't know about it before.
Yeah. Because you're always trying to be better.
That's right. My life was full of conditions. You know? You can go out with your friends if you do this. If you don't do this, then you can do that. It's always like, my life is just if clauses all over everything. And so... I have this huge paranoia, still do, but it's not as bad anymore, of people expecting something back if I give something. Or if someone gives me something out of, you know, say, the goodness of their heart or a present, I had this fear that they'd expect something back because that's how I was raised. That's, you know, that's always how it was. You do this, you get that. It was always conditions, and I didn't really understand love at that point. Because I just, like, I fulfilled the conditions. What more do you want from me, is my feeling.
And it's like, okay, I'm always just going to be the person that fulfills all of these conditions. And if that's not enough for you, I would take it personally, and I feel messed up. And, like, the conditions I fulfilled were not enough. And they were not perfect enough for what you wanted. And that's my fault. That's how I felt for such a long time. It's really crazy.
Yeah, wow.
Like, I do it to everybody whenever they do something for me. In my head, I have to stop myself and be like, what does she want? What do they want back? Like, for Celta, I just didn't have enough money. Like, I think $1,000. I saved up $2,000, but just in order to study Celta for 5 weeks means I can't work. So I needed enough money to live, and I needed enough money to pay the course fees. And so Alistair just offered to pay. You know, pay the rest, and then I pay him back whenever I can. And that messed me up, because I was like, well, what does he want from me? Is he going to want with interest, or, like, how can I even do this? And I would cry about it. I'd be like, you're just going to want me to, like, pay you back extra. You're just going to want me to do this and do that. And he's just like, no, just do the damn course. And like, no, I'm not going to do the course anymore. Never mind, I'm just going to keep working. And he was like, just do it. And I was just like, no. And he was like, do the damn course. Oh, my God, just listen to me. And I'm so glad that I did. And, you know, things like that were things that taught me that there are things such as unconditional love, and you can't just do stuff for no reason. Yeah. I'll just be like, oh, you know, I'll just take up a loan from the bank, or, like, borrow from my big brother or something, as long as you don't, because I was worried that he would hold it against me, because that's what would happen to me if I had done that with my mom. She'd be like, well, I did this. You remember that time back in the day? I did this for you. Well, you got to do this for me. So I was worried that Alice would go turn around and do that thing to me later on in the future and be like, hey, remember that $3,000 that I helped you with your course? Yeah, well, you know, like, I need a car now or something. I was just so freaking paranoid because it was all about conditions.
Yeah, when you learn that that's the way the world works, you end up, you know, fitting everything into that.
Yeah.
Expecting it to come around the corner.
Mm.
Do you feel like you were able to love your siblings unconditionally?
I was, and I was frustrated.
Yeah.
Like, I can do it. Why can't you guys love me unconditionally? Okay. I was frustrated. I really, really was. And it's like, I was always frustrated by the things I could do for people that they couldn't do for me. Like, why? I did it for you, so I would at least expect a little bit in return. And then when it doesn't happen, that's when people disappoint me. And then I just curl up, and I'm like, safety mode, and I'm just like, whatever. You know, crawl, like, what is it? Like, crawl into a ball, try not to cry. Like, that's what it would be, and then it'd just be, like, back to normal. Yeah. Because I think I knew that I could give unconditional love, but I couldn't fathom receiving it from other people, or whether or not that really existed. Because I know myself, but I don't know other people. And I don't know their hearts, and that scared me. So I was like, they're probably dicks. So that's going to disappoint me. So I'm just, yeah. Like, that's literally me. Like, my first assumption would be, you're probably a dick. Well, at least it used to be anyway.
Yeah. How much of this were you conscious of? And how much is things that you kind of understood about your thinking?
I started becoming very conscious of this at university. In high school, it wasn't so much of a thing. Like, we would just study and do our own thing. It wasn't really a big deal. It would happen with my mom. Like, I would be there for her no matter what when she's crying. And then suddenly, I'm worthless and it's all my fault. And blah, blah, blah. But that, you know, it was just my mom. So I was just like, oh, it's probably just her, whatever. I'm just not going to take that seriously. But when it started happening at uni with my friends, then I was just like, yo, what? I can sit here and talk to you for hours just because I love you. I'm not asking for anything in return, but when I need it, you're not there. And why? And then that's when, you know, thoughts start spiraling. I'm not worth it. It's because I was worthless. It's because I wasn't good enough. It's because I wasn't interesting enough. It's because I wasn't cool enough. Everything. Yeah. Just big thoughts of not being enough really scared me. Because I could be there for people, but am I enough for people? And if I am, it makes me happy. And if I'm not, or if I had a perception that I wasn't, then I'd be like, oh, that's me failing again. Whoops. I knew I could give unlimited amounts. I just didn't know if anyone could do it for me. And that messed me up. It wasn't fair. And I remember always telling Alistair, like, I feel so shortchanged. You know, I understand someone and I really help them and their situations get better. And then when it's my turn, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, chin up. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, huh, that's nice, thanks. But those days seem really far away from, like, what we have now.
Definitely.
I think those people just weren't good for us. But I dissociated them with, you know, basically my identity.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it was like the stick that I measured the world by. Maybe because we had always stuck together. You know, like I told you, we always had that uni group and we would always play together and all of that. It was just what I expected of the world. Like, hey, okay, so that's that. But it wasn't. And it's not true. And I like it. And I'm happy. Because if that was the world, like, oh, geez. You know, I used to think those guys were the best, but damn. When you get distance and you look at things from, like, a fresh perspective, you think of all the times that they were not good for you.
I mean, of course we had some great moments with them. So many good memories.
Yeah, but it goes back to what Katie was saying, where it's just for fun and you take a selfie and it's all good and you put it on Facebook and it's sweet. But
that's before real-life problems actually hit you. And then when they hit you, you realize those people actually don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you talk to them about it, and they'd be there with you in the moment, but then 2 days later, they wouldn't even bring it up with you again or ask you, hey, are you okay, or whatever. It's just
the newest piece of gossip.
Yeah. I think it really hit me that they don't actually care about, well, me, was when I was in the hospital. And I was sick, and I was actually, like, lying on my deathbed. And no one came to visit me. They all knew I was in the hospital, because I remember only one of my friends did. And he had tried to make a group outing with everyone, and they were all too busy. At the time, I was like, oh, it's fine. But now that I think back about it, it's like, no, I was on my deathbed. It really struck me hard. And it was when I went to your birthday, everyone was like, oh, my God, you were in the hospital?
Yeah,
it's like, oh my God, tell me your story. It's, you know my story. You don't need to know anything besides that I was in the hospital so close to death. Why weren't you there?
Yeah, that's them. Yeah. It's presence, again. Like, it's important, man.
But with any of them, it's as soon as they call you and they're like, I need someone to talk to, we would have been there, like, in a heartbeat. But again, it's just
not the same. We get shortchanged, yeah. And that was frustrating.
It's not the same with them. And it's things like that that fuels the thoughts of, oh,
yeah,
this
thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. It's the way that people treat you, and the way that people respect you, and the way that people value you that helps you form your own self-perception.
Yeah.
Like, as much as you want to think that it's all you, it's not.
No. The people in your life do influence you a lot. Yeah. It's like, as much as you don't admit it or pretend like they don't, at the end of the day, with the people you spend the time with, they affect you a lot.
Yeah. Because, like, ever since we've stopped hanging out with them, like, when I just hang out with you guys, I feel like I'm free. Like, I can be who I am, like, I can, and people will appreciate it, and it's the weirdest damn feeling, but it's like, you guys are either, like, robot, like, fake people, or this is the life. Like, I still can't tell, like.
It's so great whenever you hang out with us, because you're always sitting there, like, being so hilarious. Like, I'm always so happy that you're around.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's nice to finally be with people who get you.
Exactly. With people who you don't feel like, oh, if
they're
I say
just
this.
Just gonna judge you. Like, what is that even? Why did we even think they were friends?
Yeah. They were when we were young, and we didn't have any priorities besides finish school.
Oh, yeah. You're right. We didn't have any real life struggles. Like, what they would do, just get together at a birthday party and just bitch about everyone. Like, what kind of birthday? Like, happy birthday, let's start bitching about people. Really?
Yeah.
I think a lot of bitching kind of comes from not feeling fulfilled. Feeling empowered in all the ways. And yeah, it kind of feeds itself when you have such a small world.
Yeah, you know? I do kind of pity them in that sense, because I feel like They're just so ignorant.
Yeah, but going back to the sheltered life thing, you know, we both agree, like, all, I think all of us agree, we don't really know where we stand in that respect. Like, what are we going to do if we have kids? Like,
yeah, that was actually you know how this whole conversation started.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question, is how much do you shelter your kids? Like, we've seen that, you know, I was quite sheltered, and I did grow up with this concept of sort of unconditional love and believing that it's possible. You know, you weren't sheltered and were shown a lot of realities. You grew up kind of measuring the love that people gave you.
Yeah, I had like a love ruler, and I was like, yep, sweet, yep, nope.
So I think that in some ways children do deserve, we call it innocence, but I guess this, maybe children need this carefree time to learn that, you know, there are
love is
pure
possible,
things that we could strive for rather than believing from the get-go that it's impossible.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, when I was about 12 or 13 before I hit my depression and my...
Everyone goes through the suicide thoughts in this house, I think.
Yeah, good.
But I remember that before it hit me, my parents, they did shelter me a lot, but because I was going through that phase where, you know, I was depressed, and I was having suicidal thoughts, and I realized what the world was actually like, you know. In my mind, I wasn't sheltered. I got what the world was like, but then when my parents tried to shelter me and tried to close me off and wouldn't tell me about the problems that are happening in the house or the problems that are happening in the family, I felt so frustrated. I was just, like, in my head thinking, just talk to me, just tell me, I'm not a child, like, even though I was young, but mentally, I was like, just talk to me, and tell me what's happening, like, stop, I felt like they were ignoring me, like, I felt like they were just pushing me aside, and that I wasn't important, because they were saying everything to my brother,
right?
But they were saying nothing to me, so I felt like, what the hell's the point of me being? Why am I so useless in the family?
Yeah. I mean, that's sending you those messages that you're not important enough
to
explain
know,
things
right?
to you, or you're not capable of helping, but your brother is.
And that's what my mom was telling me, the reason why she was telling us all of these problems, because she wants us to feel like we are capable of change and capable of making an impact. So it's a very delicate balance.
It's a very scary thing, want to shelter your children, but at the same time you don't want to get to a point where they're aware they're being sheltered and then they start getting frustrated and hateful towards you because you're not, like, they feel like you're not being open with them. And I held such, for the longest time, I held such a grudge against my brother because they used to always do a lot for him but not really do anything for me, and it didn't really hit me until maybe 2 or 3 years ago where my mom told me that I trust you and I know you're going to live a good life. And that's when it finally hit me that, oh, they didn't show me any attention because I didn't need it as much as him. I was living my life just fine. But, you know, when you're young, at 12, 13, and they're doing this to you, all you can think about is, why don't you love me as much as him? Why aren't you being as open with me as much as him? So, it's a scary thought. It's very scary. Like, how do you find the right balance? Yeah. Is there even ever a right balance?
That's right. And that thought and everything I've been through, that's what scares me from having children. Because I never want to put another human being through what I went through. And I'm not saying, like, oh man, like, boo-hoo to my face, like, this is the worst time ever. But, like, nobody deserves it. Nobody should have to feel this way. And so if I want to create a human, then, and they're going to feel this way, I'm going to feel like the biggest damn failure. Yeah. So that's why I'm personally really scared about it.
Yeah, it's fine.
So when you guys become parents and you sort it out, like, let me know, because that would be great.
I don't know, I don't think there's ever a perfect balance when it comes to being a parent. You just do the best you can.
And that's the beautiful thing about them as well. Like, I appreciate it so much. Like, the further I am from my family, the more I appreciate them. Like, I appreciate exactly what my mom went through. And if I were her, I don't know how I would have coped. She was working 3 jobs. All, like, she was paid $8 an hour for all of them, and raising 3 kids on that shit, bro, I can't even keep myself afloat, and I'm, like, not getting paid $8 an hour, certainly, I'm not getting minimum wage, and I'm still not that, you know, not that happy. I can't raise 3 kids, I can't put them through school, give them food, clothes on their back. I don't know how she did it, and to that I'm endlessly grateful, but at that time I wouldn't have seen it. But isn't that kind of a freeing thought as well, like, you know, even if life screws up and your life isn't perfect for your kids and your kids don't have a perfect life either, give it time and they might just look back and be like, oh man, dad was really cool. Mm-hmm. Or mom, you know, she did this and she did that for us.
Yeah.
And I can't even ever understand it, even though you have rough times.
Yeah, I always feel so guilty after getting mad at my parents. Mm. Then I sit down and I remember all the stories my dad's told me of when he was trying to get me out of Iraq during the war, and how they left everything to come to New Zealand for me as a kid born with a heart disease and needing serious medical surgery.
That and they couldn't do in Iraq and only, and because New Zealand has free medical services.
And because, obviously, with the war going on, anyone with money, doctors, all got out of there. So there was no one, and the doctor that saw me was just like, you need to get her out of the country. And I remember my dad telling me the story of he needed to get a certificate because he worked for the government. And at the time, anyone who worked for the government was not allowed to leave the country for any circumstances. And he got enough points that he needed to come to New Zealand as an immigrant. Mm-hmm. He passed
the points. You need the IELTS test, you need the points.
He passed everything, but all he needed was a written document from the government stating that he could leave the country. He'd gone up to the office and he told them, you know, I've gotten the points, I've worked hard. He went up to his general because he was in the army at the time. And he went up to his general and he was like, my daughter needs medical surgery, I need to get out of the country. And the general kind of ignored him for a while, and for about, I don't know, like 2 to 3 weeks, my dad, from morning till night, would go to the government embassy building, sit in the very center, and just wait the entire day for someone to come talk to him. And people would constantly ignore him, people would constantly walk by him, no one would bother paying him attention. And one day the general came, the same one he'd gone up to, and the general just looked at him and was like, why are you still here? And my dad said, from morning till night, I'm here because I need somebody to help me get my daughter out of the country. So the general, which was completely illegal at the time, but the general just felt pity for my dad at that point. And he took him back to the document rooms and he got him the certificate that my dad needed. And he just handed it to him. I was like, just go. Just don't come back here again. Just go.
Wow.
And so whenever, and that's just one story of the many things my dad has had to do to get us out of the country. So whenever I get mad at him, or whenever I see my brother getting mad at him, or my mom getting mad at him, whatever, I just, those thoughts rush back to me. And I'm just like, no, just let him get away with this one thing, you know, after everything he's done. Just let him screw up this one time. It's okay. I'm so grateful, you know? I would have given up.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's why I'm so scared. Because I don't think I could do that. I'd just be like, bah, Felicia.
But you think you can. But
I don't know.
The time comes.
Yeah. But that's what I'm afraid of the most. I don't want to fail my child. I'd rather have no children than have a child that I failed.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to fail my child. So I'm not having children.
I mean, there was a chance my dad could have gotten killed.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty much rebelling against the government, saying, I'm not going to stay here, I'm leaving. And no one was allowed to do that. And he was just looking at them and saying, I don't care if you kill me, but please, I have a daughter. Let her get out of the country then. And I can stay, but she needs to get out.
You guys are so lucky that you got out of there.
I know. If I didn't get medical treatment when I did, I would have definitely grown up with brain damage or just died.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm so glad you exist.
Yeah.
Right? And I always, like, Salma is so strong that you would never even know she has a heart condition. Like, nothing. Like, again, like, goes back to the same thing. No, everybody has a story to tell and you just have to be cool. Like, you just have to be there to listen. Because the world is full of great things. You just need to shut up and find them.
I mean, you see these photos of, like, children in Africa smiling and playing, and you just can't help but think to yourself, if they can find happiness in there, why can't I find happiness where I am? You just need to look in the right places. You just need to notice the world around you and
be present, be mindful.
Yeah.
And also not focus on all these shoulds. Or just the people around you.
Just laugh with them.
Yeah.
It's enough.
There's always a way out. Don't ever think suicide's the only way out. There's always another way out. You just need to look. And you just need to not be afraid of asking for help.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of people are, they're too afraid to ask for help because they'll feel weak, or they'll feel like they're just going to get judged or whatever.
Or feel like let down and disappointed when you don't get the help that you needed.
Or also just ask someone to listen. I mean, no one can ever help anyone else, really. You know, what we can do
it's
is
all,
listen.
Yeah, it's all helping yourself. Yeah.
There's always someone willing to listen. You just need to find that person, always. So, the thing is, though, it's tough because you could wade through a million people who don't want to listen to find that one person that does.
Yeah. Once you've waved through, like, a million people, you would just end up being convinced that nobody wants to.
Yeah.
And that's the dangerous point.
Because if you'd just gone that 1,000,001, you would have found that person.
Mm.
But at that point, do you want to push yourself more?
That's the issue.
Yeah, that's the issue. That's what leads.
That's the crux of it. Because we had one of the friends, actually, when we started kind of a little bit opening up about depression and suicide, he just looked at us and he was like, that's weak. Only weak people do that. He turned around and he just walked away and we were like, uh-huh.
I remember that. He was like, why would anyone want to commit suicide? Why would anyone do this? And I just looked at him and I just said, have you ever been in that situation? No, I haven't. Exactly. You don't know the thoughts that go through your head when you're in that situation, when you literally feel like your only escape
is
death.
Yeah.
It's not a joke. It's not weakness. It's everybody goes through something like that. Just because you haven't yet, or maybe you never will, but don't judge others who have, because they're not weak for it. You just don't know what's going through their life.
Mm.
Not everyone's sheltered like you. Not everyone's as privileged as you. Not everyone's as lucky as you. So don't look at those who aren't and
think they're
weak.
And judge them with scorn. Like,
Because we kind of talked about how you get stuck in these loops.
Yeah.
A lot of the things that make us sad are our own thoughts.
Yeah.
And that means we can never see anyone else's thoughts.
No.
You know, you look at someone and they might have what seems like a perfectly good life.
Yeah.
But when you think, oh, why aren't they happy?
Mm-hmm.
But like,
what an
inconsiderate,
what an ungrateful kind of bitch. Or
yeah, but like, whatever's going on in your life is not actually anything to do with how happy or how unhappy you are.
Yeah.
I think that's all what's going on inside your head.
Your head, yeah. How you process it, how you quantify it, what you do with it, and how you use it as well.
Yeah, those self-destructing thoughts. They're the things that get you in the end. Just those thoughts. I think that's the worst part, when you're left alone, because then your thoughts, you have nothing but your thoughts. So when you have someone there that can talk to you, you let those thoughts out, and it just feels so refreshing, because it's not just you in your head anymore, you have someone else.
When you struggle with anxiety, sometimes the worst thing you can ever do is leave yourself to your thoughts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's like, my thoughts used to eat me up alive, and they were like vultures.
Yeah.
I used to be so scared of them, and like, try really hard to drown them out, and try really hard not to be who I am, until I realize I can harness the power of thought, and do it, you know, use it for better. Instead of tearing myself down, I'm gonna build myself up, I'm gonna build everyone up, and I'm gonna do something with my life. Like, again, thought, or anything you consider a weakness, is not just that. Everything is a double-edged sword. Like, you take it and you use it.
Mm.
But it's a struggle, like, with anxiety. Oh. Alone, thoughts, dark place. Oh, man.
Yeah. It's when I had a fight with my boyfriend the other night, I remember one of the things he said to me was, why do you like to talk about your feelings so much? I'm not a girl, I don't like to talk about blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hit me, because it's not the fact that I'm a girl or anything, but, you know, as someone with anxiety, whose thoughts nearly drove them to wanting to kill themselves, talking is good for me, because it gets those thoughts out of my head instead of letting them cultivate and
more vultures
exactly.
Tearing you apart.
If I talk, I get them out, so I feel like if others talk to me in return, they'll get the thoughts out of their head too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about being a girl, it's not about being emotional and just liking to talk because I'm a woman, but it's literally just because
facepalm.
I have to. If I don't, they'll eat me and they'll kill me. I have to.
No, but there's the thing. Aren't we lucky that we're women? Because at least we have the right to talking about our feelings. But what about a guy who has exactly these same feelings? They don't have anyone to turn to.
Yeah.
And like, if they do, you know, their guy friends would be like, what the fuck, man? Like, dude,
why are you talking about this? Are you a girl or something?
Yeah, it's so terrible.
That's the thing I feel the worst for. Because, like, at least I can be like, oh, I'm so sad, boo-hoo-hoo. And people will be like, oh, you're just a girl, it's okay. Mm. I know it's, like, the awful thing about society, but, dude.
No, but that's why I always try to push him to talk, and that's why he got mad at me, because I was pushing, I was pushing. I was like, just talk to me, just talk to me. Mm. And that's why he got mad, but that's why I push him, because he needs to get those thoughts out of his head. It's not healthy for him to leave those thoughts in his head, because they just grow. Like, he's going through a phase right now where he's just so stressed, and he's really stressed because he's keeping it all in, but I don't know how to get him to talk. That's the trouble. But like you said, I think it's that stigma where, because he's a guy, he feels like he's weak. If he does,
he's an F.
Sometimes it depends the questions that you ask.
It does,
like, it might come naturally to you guys. You've had a lot of training in talking about your feelings.
It does,
yeah. You know, even if I'm sad and I'm stressed, I still might not really be able to articulate, or I might not be aware that's where the stress comes from. Mm. So I can understand if someone is trying to get me to talk about it.
And you wouldn't know what to say.
Because
you're not trained.
I can understand being frustrated about that.
No, definitely.
Yeah, that's something I can never understand, like, not being able to articulate your feelings. Yeah, and that's rough. Again, it causes a lot of tension between different people.
Yeah, it's difficult because I think we always try and help people the way that we want ourselves.
Exactly.
The way that we want to be helped, but... You know, that's so particular. You know, everyone's different. I think the chances are that the way that I naturally want to help someone is not the right thing, because the chances are that they're going to be different to me.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's such a poignant thing to remember.
Yeah, especially if you get a lot of your self-worth from how much you're able to help people. It starts to be difficult.
Is that how you get your self-worth?
No.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
But I think you are.
Yeah, me, definitely. Yeah. 100%. 120%. That's literally what I live for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's crazy. But what about you?
Definitely the progress that I've made.
Mm-hmm.
What I learn, you know, even if something is a bad experience, if I learn from it and I'm able to tell myself, okay, that was a bit shit, but I learned that I shouldn't do that again.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And you're like, I'm awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Things like that. More that than how much I help other people, to be honest.
Very interesting. Yeah. See, that's the thing. Like, I can't fathom that.
Yeah.
So it's like, why didn't anybody help me, you know? I'm helping you. Like, bro, hello. Because it's the way you want to be helped.
Yeah, you can't
see that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm doing so much to help you, I'm making everything okay.
Yeah.
Maybe what you're doing for them is not even really, you know,
hitting
not
them.
Even taking it in.
Yeah,
it's going over their shoulder.
And
that's so hard because, you know, that's a lot of wasted effort.
Definitely.
To come to terms with.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's so important to communicate, to be like, oh, it looks like, you know.
This person. Or, like, when they reach out.
Do you know what you need? Like, do you want me to listen? Or do you want me to do something for you? Or, like, is there anything that I can do to help you? And just to be more kind of checking with the person more often.
Mm-hmm.
Is this helping? Do you want me to help?
You just don't know how you can be helped and how anyone can help you. But you just feel so alone. That's the part where you're stuck. So, like, for example, in my work, when I help people get that aha moment, or when I help people understand something they'd never thought of understanding before, or broaden their perspective in any way, whatever, that's when I'm like, yeah, my life is worth living.
Mm-hmm.
And for Katie.
Yeah, it's kind of a degree of that, but I think I value independence a lot. Mm. So, like, if I've helped someone, I want to have helped them to be more independent. It's like, okay, well, maybe I helped a little bit this time, but now you know what to do and you can do it on your own.
Mm.
Also, I guess when I spend time with people who appreciate me, listen to me, talk to me, like, all of that
as well.
It's always these kind of integral questions, like, you know, what is happiness for you?
Yeah.
Like, we wander through our lives being like, oh, I'm not happy enough. But we never actually think, oh, what is this that I want? Like, when I say happiness, what am I after?
Mm-hmm. Or love, what are you after? Yeah.
Respect. Even just helping people, what's your definition of help? What I do is I look for the moments when I have warm fuzzies.
Yes.
You know, the moments when you're like, yes, this is what I want.
This is life.
And then I collect memories of those moments and I try and find the link.
The link,
like, what am I enabling?
Same.
Or
what
is this doing for me?
I guess if I was to think about something right now, it would be A, knowing I'm achieving something on my own. So when somebody comes up to me and it's like, oh, good job, or when I'm at work and, you know,
people are like, oh, wow, you know, I'm surprised that you managed to do this or that. Or when it comes to people kind of being that person in the background, it's just that silent person in the background that you can just go to if you just need the presence or the comfort, because that's kind of where I've always been. And it feels nice to know that when people need the comfort and when people just need that moment's peace, that I'm the person they think of. Because it makes me feel like I'm actually helping by just being there, that my presence alone is enough to just give someone some
comfort. Yeah, like you haven't even done anything, but the fact that you're alive, that people have, you know, people know you, associate you with that.
Yeah.
We're all so unique that just by being ourselves around the right people at the right time, that's enough.
You don't
have to do anything special.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that's something I'm still learning. Like, when I'm with you guys, I'm like, I don't even understand what you guys find good about me. Like, that's why I don't bother hanging out with you guys too much, because I'm like, man, they're just going to get sick of me. Like, new tricks, like, that kind of shit. Like, I have this paranoia. But no, it's true. When you find people you really like, you just like them because you like them.
Yeah. And I think that's the level of being vulnerable. Like, you know, the idea of someone being like, oh, I'm going to tell you something that I've never told anyone else before. Like, that's a really special thing.
Totally.
People being vulnerable and sharing who they really are, that doesn't get old. I think what gets old is people kind of having this face of like, oh, this is what I need to be. And of course it gets boring because it's not real.
It's not you.
But I think an actual true person, you can't get sick of.
I see now. That makes a lot of sense. Because I was wondering why I never get sick of Alistair. It's because we're just real.
Yeah.
There's no facades. Like, how could I get sick of a genuine person? They're just them.
Yeah. It's like all memories, enough memories to fill like a whole lifetime. You can never learn everything about someone.
Yeah. And they're always interacting with the world. So it's not like it's going to stop. So, because the thing is, remember one of our friends, she said, oh, you know, like, I get really bored of people all the time. So that really stuck with me for some reason. And I was kind of just like, fuck, you know, is she going to be bored of me? Am I getting bored of people? Are people getting bored of me? Oh my gosh. I was like, you can get bored of people?
Yes.
Dude.
Oh my God, when people tell me that they're not in the relationship anymore because
they're just bored.
I just don't understand.
I think they just attribute boredom with incompatibility, and they just don't have another way to explain it, maybe?
Being bored of someone is something I wouldn't say.
Okay.
I would say that we're not compatible, or they're just not my type of person.
We don't find each other interesting.
But I wouldn't say that person is boring, because that person
someone else. You just don't appreciate them.
It could be the funnest thing in the world. Yeah. Like, someone could look at us and be like, they're so boring, all they do is sit at home and play video games. But to each other, we're the best people in the world. Like, let's go fucking play Dota or something.
Well, I mean, I don't think that bored should be a thing.
Me too.
Kind of a non-word. There's a variety of other things that we label as boredom, but none of them are. It doesn't exist.
And it shouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Because I remember one of our friends said, and just it stuck with me again for like all of my life. She said, "I'm never bored. There's always something I can do." And I was I think I just threw it out there without really thinking. But I was like, oh, "I'm bored." She's like, "What? I'm never bored. Like, I'm always reading or doing something or like thinking about something or like going somewhere." Or in my head with cool stuff. And I was like, I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm never bored if that's the case.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I might be sitting here eating a bag of chips, doing nothing in particular. But then from that moment onwards, I was like, I can't remember the last time I was bored.
Yeah.
We're not designed to be bored.
Yeah. I think there's definitely unfulfilled.
Yeah.
You know, there's people who feel like they're stuck in jobs.
Yes,
then don't make them happy.
Yeah.
Like, that's boredom, but I would call it unfulfillment always.
Yeah.
I think that's more useful.
Welcome home. we're recording you, by the way.
We can edit you out, but at the moment you're being recorded.
No, don't edit that out. It's perfect.
It's perfect.
It just explains the vibe of this house perfectly. Like somebody walks in, starts singing the Lion King theme.
That's pretty much what happens in this house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So boredom is not a thing.
I think
waiting is not a thing. Like, I found myself, I caught myself. I had to wait for a few hours before meeting a friend. And I found myself saying, I have 3 hours to enjoy my life. I realized, yes, I will never again think of it as waiting. It's just enjoying my life.
Well, what are you even doing if you're just sitting there doing nothing, waiting? Like, How?
yeah. Now when I have to wait for something, I just look at the trees, or I have thoughts, or, you know. We even have the internet with us all the time, so it's actually impossible to be bored or wait.
I mean, like, lucky you, right? You've got 15 minutes of your life where you're not, like, at gunpoint.
Yeah.
You're, like, something's not exploding and your leg's, like, still on your body. Like, why not?
Yeah, and even when you're waiting for someone, like, it ends up being this horrible thing. If, like, someone is late, someone is, like, kept waiting. You know, I really don't mind if someone turns up, you know, half an hour late. It's like, how much do I hate myself if I can't even stand my own company for half an hour?
No worries.
Oh, yeah, no, true. Man, this podcast went so deep, so fast, like, all the time. My life is just this.
I was just sitting there programming away, and I looked at Simon like, the fuck is happening?
Yeah.
And I just got up and I was just like, okay. What is happening? I mean, I was listening, but it was just the same time. I was just thinking to myself, how do we go from high to low so quickly?
Oh, that's me, dude. Like, welcome.
So quickly.
Wow.
I'm like a no-holds-barred person once I'm with people I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
And, like, I wanted to be like this with our other friends. Yeah. But they just...
That is something...
Yeah.
That I learned, and I'm so glad I learned it at such a young age, because honestly, it's just not fucking worth it.
No holds barred, eh?
Don't hold anything back.
Because we were the misfits. We're like the misfit duo.
Yeah. We never held anything back. Even when we were in public, we were just crazy. We were loud. We would speak openly to anybody who asked us anything. I wouldn't hide. Like, obviously, I would hide it. Personal facts about other people. But when it came to myself, if somebody asked me a question, I would instantly answer, because you either like me for who I am or you don't.
Or get out of my face.
And I couldn't care less if you didn't. I'm not here to please you. I'm here to be me. And if you're not willing to accept me, then move on with your life and let me move on with mine. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I figured that out so early, because there are so many people who are so shy and so quiet in public, and just
they restrain themselves
and they hold themselves back.
Yeah.
And,
well, if they're not restraining themselves, that's fine. But sometimes you can tell. That person wants to do it, but something's holding them back, and they can't, and they choose not to. And it's like, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
You could have had fun. You could have had some serious laughter and so many memories, but you held yourself back.
We went to my friend's play about a week ago, and my boyfriend was the only one to show up with shorts. It was kind of like a semi-formal, but not really, kind of event, and he was the only one in shorts. And I just remember the entire time he was looking around, he was like, yeah, this isn't a shorts event. This isn't a shorts event. Look at how everyone's dressed. Like, literally the entire time we were waiting for the play. And I just looked at him and I just said, why do you care so much what other people think? You are never seeing these people again, ever in your entire life. Just enjoy being here. Just enjoy being with me, talking to me. Don't worry about your shorts. They're just shorts. No one. I pointed it out to him. I was like, look, no one is paying attention. The only person caring about it is you.
Yeah.
And I feel like when people are in public, they do the same thing where no one around them really cares. Like, someone might look and be like, oh, what is that person doing?
Yeah.
But then they get over it. So you should do the same. You know, if somebody looks at you for 2 seconds, they're looking at me, they're paying attention to me, but they're never going to see me again. They're not going to remember me ever again. So let me just be me.
That was actually a liberating feeling for me when I caught myself thinking that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, that person is dressed up weirdly. Oh, well. And I was like, oh.
They think of me.
Yeah, I was like 12 or something. I was like, wait a minute. Mm. Like, nobody gives a shit. So I was like, woohoo.
No one does. Like, when are you ever going to sit there and think to yourself, oh, that person, like, 6 years ago.
Oh, but no, seriously, though. In New Zealand, nobody gives a shit. But in the Philippines, it's a thing. Like... For example, for me, like, I'm not huge, I'm not obese by any means, but I'm overweight. And if I were to wear a bikini on the beach, gawk, stare, people would come up to you and be like, what are you doing? Why are you wearing that? You're too fat to be wearing that. And giggling and laughter, it's a thing. Like, people, like, when I was a kid, would all constantly point out my chicken pox scars. Mm. They're like, what's wrong with your pock face? What are you, like, an asteroid hit by? Stuff, come on, ew, gross. But nobody ever says that in New Zealand. I've never had anyone talk to me about my chicken pox scars. It was great.
I have had a few people come up to you, because I went through some pretty horrendous acne. I'm so wrong. When I was younger, to the point that I had to take...
Accutane.
Yeah, I had to take pills to dumb it down. And I remember there were a couple of times when I was going through my phase where
I don't even think you noticed.
Yeah.
Where there was this, like,
A lady that came up to you.
Yeah, she came up to me.
She's like, do you wash your face?
Yeah, she's like, do you wash your face? You shouldn't be eating so many candy. You shouldn't blah, blah, blah.
I won't be there.
That's kind of what pushed me to get into my habit of not wanting to take photos ever.
Ew.
Because I didn't want anyone to look at my...
Let's take photos. I don't give a shit.
I should.
Yeah.
Like, because now I don't care if I go out with my acne. I'm just like, yeah, I have acne. So what? Like, what do you want from me? No one is perfect. What do you want from me? But back then, you know, when you're young and you're so easily influenced, like,
that stuff scares
you.
That
hit me so hard when she said that. I was just like, holy shit, woman.
So many things hit you like that. It just impacts you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, but it's things like that helped push me to be like, I just don't care anymore.
That's true. There's, again, double-edged sword. Yeah. Like, one good experience can lead into a lifetime of trauma, and then when you get better,
yeah,
you can move on from it.
Yeah. And it just reminds me of, like, when I was a kid as well, and how, well, none of the kids wanted to be around me because of my scar, and how all the parents will, like, pull their kids away because, oh, that girl's sick, you know?
What?
You don't know what's happening to that person. Just shut up.
Back off.
Don't do that. And I can't believe those parents would do that to their children. Like, you're not exactly teaching your children good things here by pulling them away from someone who is clearly... It's not their fault.
Yeah.
I was just a normal child that happened to be sick. I couldn't help having a disfiguring scar that I couldn't hide. I couldn't help that. You should let your child be open to these things. Like, don't shield them from that stuff, because by pulling them away, you're teaching them that this thing that's wrong with this person, it's actually wrong.
Mm.
You know, teach your children, look at this person, you're fine. Well, yeah, go play with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, she has open heart surgery, that's fine.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because it's not the kids' fault. It's like, they were curious. Like, yeah, some were scared that they didn't want to be around me, but a lot were curious as well, and a lot would be like, can I touch it? Can I look at it? And blah, blah, blah. But then you have the parents pull them away, and then the next day, those children wouldn't want to be anywhere around me because they feel like, oh, what I have is a bad thing. So they feel like they should stay away from it.
So it's...
How ridiculous. Mm. I'm over it now, but back then, holy crap. Like, having no friends and...
Yeah, that has a huge impact.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And anyone who would want to play with me, like, you know, you're just tugging them away.
Ow.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it comes back to appreciating the way that someone is, mm-hmm. not the way that they may be different from our ideal of beauty, which is kind of boring and fake anyway.
Yeah.
If everyone looked the same, that's so boring.
Yeah. Well, that's what's kind of happening around the world, though, isn't it? Like, everyone's just merging into this one ideal standard.
Yeah,
and it's boring. Yeah. And why do people care?
Yeah, why is the way that you look like even a thing?
Mm. Yeah.
I was going to ask you guys, the moment might be gone. I wish
the moment's never gone.
If you have any advice, like, it's really great that you guys were in that friend group that you had each other, but, like, do you have any advice for people who maybe are in friend groups where they really don't feel comfortable and people aren't treating them in a good way?
Just get out.
Listening to them.
Just get out. Get out as soon as you can. It's difficult because when you're like a teenager, your identity kind of pins on the people that you're with, and it was hard for us. Even, like, we didn't even get out of there until we started working, you know. We were still kind of connected to them in some way, even at university.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's really, like, if I didn't have Sama, I would have just left, because there wouldn't be anything there for me. And mm-hmm. be brave, get out, and find people that actually appreciate you for who you are. And maybe, you know, that's not going to be in real life, but there's always the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you always find friends on the internet
mm-hmm.
who feel the same way. Maybe you guys aren't connected, but with your heart, you're still connected. Mm-hmm. And I, like, Sam and I both have so many friends online that,
mm-hmm.
you know, in our darkest moments, we would turn to them and they would get it, even though they're not immediately available.
Yeah. You're still having someone listen and accepting what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, this world's a wide open place.
Yeah.
What are the chances that you're not going to find one person like
mm-hmm.
you?
Yeah.
What are the chances? You just need to get out and you just need to look in other places that you wouldn't usually look, or just go about your daily life and that person will just pop up.
That's right. That's the other thing.
But when you least expect it, it'll just pop up. And you'll just be like, wow, you know, where have you been all this time?
Yeah. Like, try not to miss your opportunities.
Mm-hmm. It's just, if you're not happy, there's no point in staying
mm-hmm.
because the longer you stay, it's not going to get any better. And
like, when we got out there and we didn't see them for a year, we realized that, you know, the distance actually helped us realize that they were not good people to be around at all. And let them talk. Just, yeah, find your confidence, not with them.
It'll seem like your world's falling apart in that time.
Yeah, because yeah.
your friends are...
Your world.
Yeah, but you'll realize later on that, no, that's such a pity thing to get upset about. They're not everything in the world, because now I've found better people and my priorities are shifted. And I've explored the world and I've seen that your whole life isn't just your friends, it's everything else. There's a wide open world out there. And eventually, someone, there's always someone who you will bump into and realize, wow, this is the person I needed. Whether it's a best friend, an acquaintance, a boyfriend, like, you just have to wait it out and not just force yourself to be in this group because you feel like that's what society expects of you, or because you're never going to find anyone else if you leave.
Can you remember the first few people that you met that you connected with outside of that friendship? Like,
you guys, for one.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, it was just you guys. Because then I was wondering. It was Sama and Alistair, but no one else really. So I was just wandering on my own. And like Sama said, you know, people will pop up if they pop up, but I wasn't searching. Then you guys popped up. At first, I was kind of just like, oh, you know, I can't really be bothered with social interaction right now. I just want to go home and play games. Like, I don't really want to invest some time into these people who may or may not be that good for me. I gave it a shot one day and it was amazing, and like, I could never look back. So you just need to take a chance.
Yeah.
And like, you take that chance when you're ready to as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think for me, it would have had to have been when I met Abby.
Abby's friends.
Abby. Just herself. Abby, yeah. Because for the longest time, I think since I was like 13, 14, I always thought that I was just going to end up alone. Like, that was that I was never, ever going to meet anyone because, you know, I went through... Let's not get into it, but I went through a lot. And I just felt like, you know, that was it. This is my life. I'm never, ever going to meet anyone. Not because there aren't people out there, but because I could never open myself up. And any time I tried to, or any time someone showed any type of interest in me, I would instantly switch off, and I would just literally ignore them, pretend like they didn't exist. I could be good friends with them one day, and then as soon as they showed just the slightest interest, I would just switch off. And because that kept happening to me, I felt like, oh, that was it. I was never gonna meet anyone. That, like, that was my life, whatever. But then I met him, and I realized that no, you just need to actually wait it out, and that person will come. Or if you're in a group of friends who are really toxic and you feel like you're never going to meet anyone better, no, you will. You just need to be brave, be strong, be patient, wait it out, and you will find those people. They pop up in the most unexpected times. Like, he popped up when I was going through my phase where I was in and out of hospital all the time, and I was so sick. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't bathe myself from how much pain I was in. And I was going through all that, and then suddenly this person comes along who I'm lying on my deathbed, and all I could think about is, I miss you. And I sent him a text saying, you know, I miss you, I wish you were here. Like, that's all I could think about. And that's when it struck me that this is the person that I have waited so long for.
I don't even think you necessarily have to be patient. Like, again, don't waste the moment of your life. Like, sort yourself out.
Yeah,
you know? Do the things you've always wanted to do. Improve yourself in ways you never could have thought possible. Challenge yourself. Make yourself better every moment, and the positivity that you radiate will attract
people, the right people towards you. And if you're doing the things you always want to do, then you'll be hanging around other people that who are always doing the same things as you.
Yeah.
And it'll just grow and grow and grow. The more you get out there, the more you be yourself, the more you meet other people being themselves who happen to share the same interests as you.
Don't let anyone box you up, and you'll find somewhere. Just be your genuine self, and the people around you don't really like it, they're not the people that you need to be in your life.
I remember one of our friends was going through this phase where, like, any guy who would show any interest in her, she would instantly fall in deeply in love with them or whatever. And she was
just kind of be a doormat for them.
Pretty much. And she was being a doormat, and she was with this guy, and she was so depressed, and she was so... I just looked at her and I just said, what the hell are you doing with your life? Like, why are you with this guy who was clearly causing you so much pain? Go out there. Learn to be strong, learn to make yourself happy, don't depend on others to make you happy. As soon as you learn how to be happy on your own, then you're ready to be in a relationship with other people, because a relationship isn't about
other people. I make that person happy, he makes me happy. It's about being happy together. Get away from those people. Learn what defines you. Make yourself happy. And everything else will just fall into place from there. There's no better advice than that. Just go and be yourself.
Find out what you enjoy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Find ways to do it and people to enjoy it.
Exactly.
Exactly.
That's how I found it.
Yeah.
Studying CELTA, like, I worked hard for that shit. Like, broke my back over everything, but I knew it was something I was passionate about and something I had to do and something I knew would give me, like, a sense of fulfillment. Mm-hmm. And now I did, and I've found people that feel the same way. Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
Exactly.
Yeah.